Kavinsky here.
And I'm Mr. Seth Castellum.
And this is episode 77 of the TV and Less video game podcast for TVandLess.net.
We're going to have to work on that intro a little bit.
Yeah. Our trio is down to two, as Seth would say. And I would totally miss the point. It goes right over my head.
It's Lion King. It's Lion King!
It is Lion King. And so the introduction's a bit stilted, but we'll work on that. We will have an epic introduction.
I think you did your name, like, too fast. I, like, was caught off guard. I wasn't expecting it.
I think I that was the same speed I do it every time.
And I was like, whoa, what was that? What am I supposed to follow that up with?
Not only have I done this 77 times in the context of this podcast, I have, like, 300 videos where I do it there, too. It's the same speed, like, every time.
All right, well, maybe I'm running a little slow.
That's putting it mildly.
Oh, damn!
Did you just get up?
No. Okay. But I woke up early, but I got very little sleep, so I don't know.
Take some melatonin. Now, what do you need melatonin? If you took melatonin, you'd be asleep for, like, 3 days.
Sweet, that sounds good. That'd be like a time machine drug for me.
Except there's no going back. So, you know, this has been an atypically busy week for me, but I'll spare you the details. I received my 200th DS game in the mail, which is exciting.
I saw that. Some game I never heard of.
It's a cave shoot 'em up. Ketsui, and the DS version is called Death Label. And the DS version, actually, I'm not really familiar with the arcade. I think it was also ported to Xbox 360. I'm not familiar with those versions. But my understanding is those are more of a traditional shoot-em-up. The DS version is more like a boss rush mode.
Huh.
And it's pretty good. I like it. It was very expensive. It was like $130, $40, something like that.
That's a lot of money for a DS game.
Yeah, it's one of the most expensive. Now, that is the version that comes with, are you familiar with Super Play DVDs, Super Play videos?
No.
It's basically somewhat like I don't know how big they are in Japan. They're obviously more known there than they are here. But they're basically videos and or DVDs of people who are awesome at shoot 'em ups playing shoot 'em ups.
Huh. Yeah. And that just comes with a DVD in that case.
Yeah, it's a box. It's a box, and there's like a... It's not in a sleeve, but it's not in a full-size jewel case. It's in one of those slimline, like, plastic cases.
Okay.
So it's... And it's still sealed?
Well, I can't imagine it's the most interesting thing to watch in the world.
No, I guess not. But, I mean, I guess if you're really into the game, like, you can... I mean, maybe it's sort of like... You know, watching someone, like, really good at a sport, being awesome at a sport. Or maybe you can get tips yourself on how to get through areas by watching someone who's good at it.
After I've seen that video of that dude playing, like, Ikaruga 2-player by himself and doing awesome, I don't think anything could ever top
that. You can't top that. fair enough. I probably won't be watching the DVD. I don't really have much interest. But I wanted to get that set in particular. Because you can buy the game separately, and it's a bit less. But, yeah, it's pretty expensive for something that's just a game and just a DVD that no one's going to watch. Even now, previous owner didn't watch it, so.
My question is, why is the guy on the box so sad?
He looks pretty bloody, dude.
Is he bloody? I see specks on his face, but
he's
I don't know.
It's kind of beat up.
It looks like he was eating his sleeve of his shirt.
Yeah, here's the thing. Shoot 'em up stories... I don't know. Like, why am I fighting, like schoolgirl robots in Dodonpachi? Couldn't tell you. I don't understand it. That's okay. I'm okay with this.
The worst is, like, Castle of Shikigami 3, I think. There's just, like, long cutscenes in that thing.
Oh, and well, you think that's bad. When we get to what we've been playing at the end of the episode, I'll tell you a little bit about Cinemora. Have you played that yet?
No. I did see you tweeting about it, though.
Yeah. I have some... conflicting thoughts on that game. But it was pretty exciting to get Ketsui in the mail. I already have a couple of other games on the way. I have Arkanoid DS, which to the best of my knowledge is the last game I need to complete my collection of, like, DS included, like, peripherals. Like, peripherals are included with the games.
And what comes in the Arkanoid DS?
when it was released here, we didn't get this at all. Now, in Japan, it was bundled with the game where you could buy it separately, and it was a paddle controller. You plug it into the GBA slot, and it's like a, you know, like it's like playing Arkanoid at the arcade. It's like a knob to turn the paddle. And I paid probably too much for that, too. But I think that was like $70.
Now, is the American version compatible with the knob?
I don't know. I want to say yes, but I am not 100% sure on that.
See, it's always, like, weird when they release, like, the peripheral only in Japan, but it still, like, works with the U.S. stuff.
Yeah, like, I mean, the code's still in there. It's just that the whole thing of, like, manufacturing, distributing this whole other peripheral in another country is probably more complicated than they really wanted to get into.
Well, I mean, I have, like, Marvel Super Heroes on Saturn, like, the U.S. version. It even has the option for the, like, RAM expansion pack on there, but that was never released in the U.S.
No kidding. Yeah, I'm sure they just leave the code in there, because why take it? Why take that out? Why you're just spending more time taking that out. There's no point.
Yeah, yeah. But, I mean, it's, like, right in the menus. I'm sure, like, a lot of people were confused. Like, what the hell is that? What is a 4-megabyte expansion?
Oh, it's blatantly, like, right there in the menu.
Yeah, it's right in the options menu.
Yeah, that's a bit unfortunate. And I also have Infinite Space on the way. I don't know if this person watches my videos. I'm not so sure if he listens to the podcast. But he contacted me on Twitter. Initially, he wanted to trade for, like, some GameCube games. Apparently, he's collecting GameCube games. And anything worthwhile I have on the GameCube, I'm just not looking to trade, you know? And so he offered to sell it. And the thing is, like, he's like, oh, how much do you think? And I wanted to give him a fair price. Like, I'm not out to, obviously, I want to spend the least amount I can, but the least amount I can while simultaneously not ripping off someone nice enough to offer me a copy of Infinite Space. And so I looked on eBay, and it turns out that game really has kind of plummeted in value. I think there was a while there where it was kind of expensive. Not so much anymore. Like, I look at completed, I don't look at, like, you go in there and you can look at all these buy it nows, and that doesn't mean
nobody's buying them now.
Right, exactly. That's why they're piling up. But I went to, like, completed listings, and, like, there was one that went for, I mean, used, but it went for $25, including shipping. So.
Yeah, that's nothing.
Yeah, it hasn't quite, held on to its value there. But, you know, despite the mixed reviews, that's when I want to try. I think I'll have all of Platinum's games at that point.
Infinite Space is a Platinum game.
Yeah.
Wow. I didn't know they made RPG-looking things.
Yeah, I guess you pilot a ship and customize your ship and then battle. Like, I don't know which. Like, I was trying to, like, read to see if there was more to it. Like, do I get to explore worlds and talk to people? But I think it's mostly about customizing your ship and blowing things out of the sky. So I'm like, oh, it's like Star Trek without, like, all the exposition. That's pretty exciting, and I think at this point I'll probably start dying down on, like, my DS collection, because...
Yeah, I mean, 202, I think that's good enough.
Yeah, I mean, there's still more games that I want to get. Like,
how? How is that possible?
Dude, yeah, I don't own a single Phoenix Wright game, and I'm not super into them, but my collection feels really weird without any Phoenix Wright games, and, like, I only have half of the Layton games, because I have the first two in PAL format because they were just given to me. Two different people gave me those, and I appreciate that, and I actually prefer those box arts. So I wanted to get the third one from the PAL territory, but not the fourth one, which totally throws the whole thing off, because the fourth one doesn't have London Life.
Right.
So I'm still trying to sort that out, but, I mean, I think it's just a testament to just how, like, awesome the DS library is. The fact that I can have 200 games, and there are a few duds in there, I won't lie, but that I have 200 games and there's still more that I want to get.
Yeah, I have 86 DS games, and there's a few more I could get.
That's still a lot, though. I mean, that's still 86, man. That's, like, nothing to sneeze at. That's an awesome library.
That is a lot. I can see, like, I don't know, I can't see myself going past 100. I don't know. Like, 200 is crazy to me. It's just nuts.
If you want, you can take a look at my backloggery and see what I have and see what I'm getting at. But, yeah, no, there's a lot of, I mean, there's probably things that you might want to try out that you don't even know. Like, you don't own, like, a jump game, for instance, right?
No, I don't.
I mean,
there's definitely a few, like, imports I need.
Yeah. And there's a few more I'd like to get. But, yeah, I mean, I don't know how much more I can go. Like, I was thinking, like, I mean, obviously I don't have, like, a number goal. Like, I don't want to sound too number-centric about this collection. I'm just buying games that I want to play, and it happens to be 200-plus games. I mean, I was thinking about it, and I'm like, I don't think I could hit 250. But then again, I never thought I'd hit 200 either, so... But I think realistically, there's probably maybe another 20 or 25 games that I would like to get.
Still good. That's a good amount, dude.
Yeah, I know. I mean, there's just, like, all these strange things. I was doing research. Like, this is a Nintendo-published game in Japan. I forget what it's called. Like, Kurikin Nano Island Story or something like that. I forget who developed it, but Nintendo published it. And it's, like, this weird, like, Pokemon-esque, like, RPG where you fight with these nano things, these microbes or something like that. It's a strange game. I kind of want that game. Like, there's just all these bizarre things. Awesome. But anyway, that's the highlight of my week because of how busy it was. How have you been?
I had a birthday.
That's right. How was that?
It was all right. I went out with some friends and family and ate at a place called Crazy Burger, and they have, like, just all these animals you can eat in burger.
Was it crazy?
It's not as crazy as it sounds. And they sell crazy with two E's, so you're expecting to be extremely crazy, but no, it's not. But
it's like mildly unsettling burger then.
Well, there's stuff like, they have antelope burgers and gator burgers.
It's a whole fucking menagerie of animals.
Yeah, ostrich, kangaroo.
Oh, man, actually, when you think about it, that is kind of crazy.
That is pretty crazy. I had myself a wild boar burger.
It's like, well, you know, wild boar. You should, you know what, I think, man, I would love to go there, because what I would do is I would see if I can eat, like, I would call it, like, the around the world burger. Like, I would try to eat, like, an animal from, like, every continent. Like, give me the rhino burger. Let's just fucking do this.
And no penguin, though.
What's that?
They have no penguin, so I don't know how you're going to do the Antarctica.
I don't know. Water from natural glaciers.
No. Just
dump it over the burger.
You're not eating an ice burger.
Yeah, it's a shame.
But it's pretty good. It's pretty good. And also, one of my nephews got me an awesome candy pink PS3 controller. So that is going to be my new default controller.
Oh, I'm jealous. I would love a new PS3. I'm still rocking, like, this ancient six-axis that... I don't know if it's a PS3 or my controller, but there are periods of time where, like, it just drops a connection for probably about 5 seconds. And it repeatedly does whatever the last input was. So if my last input was, like, walking forward, my character will continuously walk forward, and I can't do anything else for about 5 seconds.
What is that? Buy a new controller, Craig.
The controller is like the cost of like a game. Like, I remember when I was on, obviously I was on a paper route, so I mean, this is a completely different perspective, but I remember when like Nintendo 64 controller was like $30. I bought like my Extreme Green limited edition from Toys R Us, like $30. Like, that just like rocked me like a week and a half of pay.
I want to say they were like 20 even.
Maybe, but I definitely paid 30 for my Extreme Green. Maybe that's just Toys R Us.
All right.
But, you know, now I'm looking at them like $50, $60 for a damn controller. It's ridiculous.
They're pretty expensive. I mean, that's like, well, they're selling the hardware at so much lower now. They got to make up money and other things.
Yeah, no. I mean, I guess I understand it, but it has made me reluctant to buy another controller. But I would like to get a new one. One that rumbles and doesn't drop connection.
So I can't believe you're rocking the six axes. I mean, by the time I bought my PS3, they weren't even selling six axis controllers anymore.
Nope. It's like a collector's piece now. But, well, my PS3 is pretty old. Like, I'm just waiting for it to die. I keep saying that because, like, I feel like just knowing my luck, it will die at some point and just make this perfect trifecta. Well, not even a trifecta. It's like quadfecta of shitty, like, Sony hardware. Like, every other piece of Sony hardware I've had, like, device I've had to replace. Well, not the Vita. But PSP, PS2, PS1. Awesome.
I feel sorry for your PS systems, Craig.
Yeah, me too. But what else did you do for your birthday?
I don't know. Nothing.
Just ate animals and got a pink controller. Man, I love pink shit.
What about my little niece? She, like, got me some pine cones. She's, like, two. She's 2 years old, and she got me some pine cones for my birthday. It was adorable.
That's kind of cute.
Yeah. And that was, like, the second best present I got, too, so.
So was the first best the controller?
Yeah.
You know what? Pine cones and a PS3 controller. I think that's... And a Wild Boar Burger.
Wild Boar Burger has, like, whipped cream on it. It's, like, whipped cream and some sweet sauce. It's, like, a very sweet burger. It's weird.
That is strange. How was it, though?
It's really damn good.
Nice, nice. Nah, that sounds like a good birthday to me. I mean, it's second to mine where I was buying video games in Akiba, but... I think Wild Boar Burger brings yours
up. We can't all fly to Japan and buy video games, Craig.
I know. But anyway, you want to talk about some video game news?
I guess.
Okay, sounds good to me. So, Epic Mickey 2 has been announced. It's available on the Wii, the 360, and the PS3, and it's a musical.
Yeah, constant songs is what Warren Spector said.
And, you know, that seems like a really natural progression. I mean, you know, he really wanted the first game to really pay homage to all these, you know, awesome Disney characters and properties. And I think if you're going to do a sequel, having it be a musical makes a lot of sense because, you know, music plays a big part in Disney stuff.
Absolutely. I mean, what is there? That Atlantis movie, I think that's the only feature film I can think of that doesn't have a lot of songs in it.
Yeah, I mean, they really haven't been doing it a whole lot, like, now. But then again, they haven't been doing, like, any traditionally animated movies anyway.
But the last one, Princess Frog, had...
Oh, yeah, that's right, yeah.
I had a lot of songs. That was all singing.
Yep, they were singing in that one. Epic Mickey 2 also has drop-in, drop-out co-op. Second player can play as Oswald, who accompanies Mickey at all times. So Oswald is... you know, very much integrated into the gameplay is a major part of the game. He is not a Velvet Dark. and so a second player can just jump right in and play as Oswald, like, right away, right there. And I think that's awesome.
Yep. And apparently there's also a 3DS game coming out,
too. This psyched my mind. This blew me away. Yeah. It's being developed by Dream Rift.
Who did Monster Tale.
Yeah, Monster Tale and Henry Hatsworth, that developer is doing the 3DS version of Epic Mickey. And Monster Tale is one of my favorite games on the DS, so I'm super psyched for that. You know, I'm curious. I mean, we both enjoyed the Wii version, but what platform do you think you'd pick up Epic Mickey 2 on?
I'm waiting for E3 because I'm like 80% positive a Wii U version is going to be announced.
Oh, really? Yeah, that's a good point. If there's a Wii U version, I'll probably pick up the 3DS version. Well, it depends, I guess, when the game comes out, because if it's available, if it's ready for, like, launch or whatever. But I would be willing to wait for a Wii U version, yeah, and then get the 3DS version day one.
But otherwise, I am not sure. I really did like the pointer controls of the first one. And, I mean, I guess I might work on the PS3 with the Move. So, and
yeah, that would be interesting.
Yeah, a lot of the graphics have looked better on the HD versions. I mean, not in this video that I posted, but I mean, there's later videos where I think G4 TV got some videos or something. I don't know, but I have no idea. I'm torn. I'm torn on which platform to get this on.
Yeah, me too. I don't think I will be getting it on the original Wii. I think yeah. I can say that. As much as I like the pointer controls. And as much as I enjoyed the game and graphics, art, everything, you know, et cetera, et cetera, if there's an option to have a prettier version, I think I'm going to do that.
Yep, same.
Let's see here. Little Big Planet Karting, which is such a stupid name, has been officially announced. United Front Games is handling development. They did Mod Nation Racers. And, you know, what must it feel like to be at United Front Games and be like, okay, that game you did that's a lot like Little Big Planet, fuck it. Dude, make it exactly like Little Big Planet. You're like, oh, man, like, there goes our property. This sucks.
Well, I don't know. They should be thankful for the work. That's all I'm saying.
I guess so. It's strange because it's like, I mean, Mod Nation was... like, what, Little Big Planet? I mean, it's not, you know, an uncommon comparison to make, you know, the Mod Nation Racers to Little Big Planet. Mm-hmm. But it's just strange that where it's like they completely take away, like, the appearance of Mod Nation and just put in Little Big Planet. Make it exactly the same, just put a Sackboy in there, we'll be okay. And to me, like, that's just so strange. They're just selling it on the name as if, I mean, well, maybe that will change things. I don't know. But
I did not like the art style of Mod Nation Racers either.
I did not like the character design. I liked the art design of everything else. The characters were just like, I didn't really dig those.
No, me neither. Plus, I don't know, the Little Big Planet looks cool with all the cardboard and fabric stuff anyway.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, maybe it's not a direct comparison. Maybe that's not fair. But, I mean, I'll be interested in seeing what it's like. One thing I liked about Mod Nation, though, is that it was very simple to create stuff. And Little Big Planet just, like, overwhelmed me, particularly when you're trying to do it with, like, a controller. I just don't think that, like, that level of creation is really intuitive with a controller. And, so, I mean, we'll see how they handle it here with a racing game. But that's one thing I will give to Mod Nation, that I liked its simplicity and ease of use.
I'm surprised they didn't, like, show any, like, building at all in the trailer.
Yeah.
Since it's so integral to both games.
And it's not like it's far off. It's coming out sometime this year.
Yep.
So.
Also, one of the dudes at United Front, the senior producer, I can't remember his name right now, he was in the comments on the Sony blog, he was talking about how everybody should be happy about the load times, because that was one of the main complaints of Mod Nation Racers. Because the load times are effing long in that game. You've played Mod Nation Racers, right? On PS3?
No, not PS3. I've played the PS... I have the PSP version.
Alright, well, the PS3 version, the load times are ridiculous.
What is it with Mod Nation, the people, like, who make Mod Nation Racer games and trying to, like, defend, like, stupid shit, like, load times and not having online play? These are good things! You should enjoy sitting around doing nothing and not playing online with your friends. Like, no. Like, own up to it. We just didn't have the resources to implement online. Cool. Done. That's fine. I can live with that. Don't tell me I should be... Don't tell me, like, this... It's a good thing you don't have online.
Yeah, that was... Yeah, I don't know. What was the developer's excuse on the Vita version? Something about, like, online's been done and they're trying something new? I don't know.
Right, that's what they said. They're like, yeah, online's been done. We just didn't feel it was necessary for this project. And that might be true. But don't take a... online is just another way to play with other people. Like, it's... I mean, it's not a completely radical... I mean, couch co-op, playing with your friends in the same room, that's probably overall better. But, I mean, in the end, it's still just a method of playing with other people. You could still be playing with your friends. You and I were just playing Kid Icarus last night. We live on opposite sides of the country. So, you know, it's just another way of playing with people, including your friends. So to say, like, oh, this multiplayer-centric game, we're not going to have online because it's not necessary. No, it's totally necessary.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know what's worse, saying that or that we didn't have time, Sony rushed us with it.
Well, that's, unfortunately with that, like, the problem is there, then there's, like, blame. When you try to say, like, oh, our artistic vision was totally to limit how you play multiplayer, as opposed to, like, oh, the old ball and chain wouldn't let us do it, like, you know, there you're attributing blame.
Yeah.
And that's probably what they're trying to avoid to do, but to me, like, just be... I think if PR people and publishers were just way more honest, like, I mean, I think that's one of the big problems with, like, Capcom. You know, last episode we were talking about, like, well, I was talking about how I didn't mind on this DLC, but, like, if Capcom was just upfront, I think there'd be a little bit less, like, anger over it. Just be honest with us. You didn't have time, you didn't have the money. The end. Boom. It doesn't undo the fact I don't have multiplayer, online multiplayer, but you were honest about it. I can live with that.
Yeah. I like the Kamiya's... Hideki Kamiya's tweets on that whole thing.
Yeah, he was angry as shit. His tweets are hilarious, though. He's kind of a dick, but I love it.
I would follow him, but he, like, I don't know, has, like, 200 tweets a day, dude.
Yeah. We're talking about someone who works at Platinum. He responds to his fans' tweets a lot, but people tweet him, like, the stupidest shit. And he's not afraid of, like, being like, no, this is stupid. Like, he's not afraid of... My favorite one was, like, someone asked him, it was like, what if the girl you were trying to impress and outrun was Bayonetta or something like this? Like, this really a bizarre question. And he just he just responded with a face plane. And I'm like... This guy's awesome.
I've seen somebody, like, just tweet him, oh, you... Wait, no, Bayonetta is my favorite game ever. And then he just wrote back, I know.
he's so awesome. Anyway, moving right along here. Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy for the 3DS is coming to North America this summer, which is great news. I love rhythm games, even though I'm really bad at them. And I'm looking forward to this quite a bit. This is developed, actually, by the same studio that did Electroplankton.
I thought, like, one dude made Electroplankton.
Well, I think one dude was sort of, like, the inspiration for, like, I think one dude was the, I don't know. I can't think of the word for it. But I think he was maybe the idea man, but Indie Zero was the studio that made the game.
All right. I'm not even sure, but I'm very much looking forward to this game.
And I can't wait for all the DLC.
Right. How much DLC is there in Japan on there?
I'm not 100% sure. There's quite a bit. And I think people were complaining that it was kind of pricey. But, I mean, the game, the retail game, though, has, like, from my understanding, like, more than 70 songs. I don't know how true that is. That's a lot. But if that's the case, like, whatever, man. They can put out all the DLC they want because the retail game is pretty packed.
I wonder if the songs, the DLC songs, would they be saved to the SD card, I guess?
I would assume so, yeah. And it would just, the game would have to, that's, I mean, DLC, all games that, would be able to utilize, like, patching or DLC moving forward, I think patching for retail games is rumored to be included in the next 3DS firmware update. But I would assume that the game would have to be programmed for that capability. Like, it would have to be able to, like, look at the SD card and retrieve files from there. But I think many games already do that because that's where the Street Pass feature is located, is all located on the SD card. So maybe I'm wrong. Maybe they don't need to be programmed specifically to look at the SD card for DLC. Maybe they're just sort of programmed in a way that makes them able to look at the SD card for anything.
Well, if that were the case, then they really need to patch Mario Kart.
Yeah, right. well, I heard that the patching was... I shouldn't say I heard. There was some loose talk that perhaps the patching was a result of a major glitch found in Monster Hunter in Japan.
Oh.
Nintendo's totally, like... If that's the case, Nintendo's totally bowing to, like, Monster Hunter. Like, we need a second analog stick. No problem, Capcom. We'll get right on that.
Right. I forgot. That's how the whole second analog stick came about.
Yeah. We need patching. This thing's broken. Yeah, no problem. We got that. We're on it.
just keep giving us Monster Hunter games. Mm. We need it.
Oh, it's good stuff. Baldur's Gate. We talked about this last episode. Baldur's Gate 1 and 2, along with their expansions, are being sort of remade. They have all the original content, but they have new content as well. The first game is coming to the iPad, which is pretty cool for me because I don't have a PC. I can't play these remakes. I would like to try out Baldur's Gate. I would try it out on my iPad.
I still don't even care about these games. Just the name Baldur's Gate.
Well, they're generally considered classics, and I like to be well-versed in video games. I enjoy video game history, so I like to give them a shot. The only thing I'm concerned with is I have a first-gen iPad. And
nice.
I don't know... They're not intensive games, but, I mean, I don't know what they're going to do with them. Maybe they won't run as well on the first one. I don't know. That's one of the big problems with, iOS or even Android gaming, where, these are sort of trumpeted as, like, this is the new handheld gaming, but it's, like, until... two iterations later, when games aren't running so hot on your, relatively ancient hardware.
Yep.
So you're spending like $400 in the span of like, 4 years just to keep up. The games are cheap, but you constantly have to re-up your hardware. It's not very appealing.
Unlike DS, which is on year, 7 or 8 or something? Ridiculous.
Yeah, and it's still going. Yeah, and I mean, and then there's the argument, you're not getting prettier games, and they're not faster, et cetera, et cetera. And, like, I guess that's fine by me. I mean,
but you're also not dropping, like, $600, is it? I don't even know, $600 every year?
What's $600 every year? Oh, for an iPad?
For an iPad?
Well, I don't think even then it's necessary to do it every year. I think every other, because it's like the next one obviously is going to, like, the successive iOS device is going to be a bit better than the previous one, but it's not really until the one after that that you start noticing games are being developed more with that one in mind, and that newer games, they may not even run on your older one, but if they do run, the vast majority do, but a good chunk of them are not going to run as well.
Yeah. Also, I hear that, like, all Retina games or whatever for the new resolutions, they have to update even the older, the games for the older iPads. So it's, your games are going to take up more space if they're updated, there's no matter which iPad you have.
There is that too. But that's fine. I don't have a whole lot on my iPad. It's mostly just games, a few Japanese language things, and then like some music. There's not a whole lot on there. And finally, I'm going to let you talk about this news piece because I'm not super well versed with this. So
there's an Adventure Time game coming to the Nintendo DS. And Adventure Time is a very weird cartoon that's on Cartoon Network. I love it a lot. It's good stuff. It's not often like laugh out loud funny. It's just bizarre and fun to watch. I don't know. But WayForward is making a Nintendo DS game based on the cartoon, and the series creator Pendleton Ward said he's going to be working very closely with WayForward on the game. So I think it's going to be good stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's pretty cool news. Like, I'm not into Adventure Time, but I still think that's pretty cool news. I think that's good stuff. Mm-hmm.
It's supposed to come out this year, according to Pendleton, and I have no idea if it's going to be 2D or 3D or what. I'm assuming 2D, just because it's WayForward on DS, and I think, they have, like, only one 3D game on there, which is the Taz game.
Yeah, but even that could probably operate in 2D. It could have been sprite-based.
Yeah, but no, so I'm looking forward to this.
Awesome. And that rounds up news. And before we get into this week's topic, I forgot to talk about this in the intro. Guess I could always edit it in, but I'm kind of lazy, so I'm going to do it now. In addition to being available on iTunes and through RSS and streaming and direct download, this podcast is now available on Stitcher Radio. You can go to stitcher.com, S-T-I-T-C-H-E-R, in case my New England accent is throwing you off. And Stitcher is also an app you can download on your iPhone or your Android device, and it sort of aggregates spoken word shows, podcasts, I guess. So you can download this, you can get like, you know, IGN's podcast, This American Life, Adam Carolla, like, the whole mess of content. And it's a convenient way. A couple people said they wanted the show on there, so if you use Stitcher or are interested in Stitcher, this show is now on there. And all those options are actually on the site. So if you go to any episode, well, at least moving forward, you're going to see all the options there for iTunes, Stitcher, RSS, and, of course, streaming and download. Streaming will work on your iPhone because it's HTML5. So that's there's just trying to keep all the options out there for people.
You're on top of this shit, Craig.
I'm trying. So this week's topic is the 3DS. Again, we talked about this a year ago. It has been a year since the 3DS came out. And I thought it would be fun to sort of take a look back at the last year. Now, Seth and I worked collaboratively on a piece on the site, on TVList.net, about our thoughts about the past year. And while we weren't exactly in disagreement, we weren't exactly in agreement either. I think that's what made the piece interesting, and will probably make this conversation interesting. And Seth likened the 3DS library to a dam that is cracking but hasn't yet broken.
Yes, I did.
Would you care to elaborate on that?
I think it took several months, I think, for a lot of the big games to finally start hitting the 3DS. And right now there's still only a few of them, I think, that are absolute must-buys. So I think it's just like barely...
For you, what would qualify a must-buy?
Mario Kart 7, I think, Super Mario Land 3D. I think Kid Icarus is a must buy. And I think that's it, really.
Really? I mean, you don't consider like Resident Evil a must buy?
Yes. I'll go with Resident Evil as well.
Okay.
And actually, now, I'm not going to say any of the 3DS shops. Even though I enjoy a couple of them, I don't think any of the eShop games are must-buys.
Okay. Now, see, I'm of the opposite opinion. I feel like the 3DS library is actually had a really good first year. I want to talk a little bit about the launch games, because I think that's where a lot of the problem is, because there was a negative perception at launch. I think Strike 1 was the price. Now, I paid $250. Was it a small amount of money? No. But did I have a problem paying that amount of money? And the answer is no. I understand that other people did, and that's okay. And that's why I think the price drop was ultimately a good thing, and it got the system into more people's hands. Did you have a problem with the $250 price point?
If I did, I wouldn't have bought it. So no, that's a good point.
Yeah, you probably have more restraint than I do. So, I mean, on the plus side, we also got the Ambassador games. Like, for some people, that just simply wasn't enough. They're like, oh, the price dropped, and all I get are these stupid games. But I currently have Yoshi's Island wherever I go, and I think that's ultimately a positive thing.
And that was something Nintendo did not need to do. No. That was, I mean, a lot of early adopters get burned by price cuts.
Right.
That's just something that happens. But no, I think it was really cool Nintendo to give out 20 free games for people who did buy early.
I absolutely agree. Now, I think that was Strike 1 was the price, but Strike 2 is that there was a lack of big-name games at launch. I'm not 100% sure why this happened. Now, Nintendo says they want to step aside and let third parties step up to the plate. Because that is a common complaint from third parties, well, we can't compete with Nintendo. Well, that's because you're not making games that are as good as Nintendo. Like, that's your problem. And so Nintendo stepped aside, but they did release, a few games for the launch in the launch window. I think they bet a little too much on Nintendogs now, Nintendogs plus cats, that is. Because, I mean, this may surprise some people, because if you're not familiar with it, Nintendogs is one of the best-selling games of all time.
Uh-huh.
That game was enormous, and I think that if you don't know that, I don't mean to sound like a dick like this, but I think it only proves how some of us that are, you know, enthusiast gamers are sort of closed off to some of the more casual players, and you know how we live in a bubble. And but no, Nintendogs was massive. That game was huge in terms of sales, and I think Nintendo kind of hoped that people would, you know, that would continue in Nintendogs plus cats. And maybe it would have if the system wasn't priced $250. I didn't have a problem paying that. Joe Blow Consumer probably does.
I think even if it was cheaper, I don't think the momentum would have carried. It was a very, like, oh, look how new and everything this is sort of thing when it first launched on the DS. I think it was, since it had already been done, I don't think a lot of people cared. I don't know.
That's a good point. I think I agree with that, too. And I think Nintendo just banked a little too much on Nintendogs plus cats carrying them. But Pilotwings Resort was a good game. And I think that got unfairly slammed for things. I think, you know, one of the biggest complaints is, like, there's just not enough things. And there's an argument that perhaps Pilotwings is not an appropriate game for this era, because it's been like 15 years since the last one.
Uh-huh.
And there's an argument there, and I understand that, but Pilotwings has never been about things, and never was. The previous two games, if you talk to people about Pilotwings, the topic of accomplishments comes up, but most people talk about all the stupid, crazy shit that they did dicking off. And that's what Pilotwings is. And maybe there's a discussion in whether Pilotwings Resort has more or less or the same amount of content as other ones. I don't know. I played the other two games. I'm not well-versed in them enough to take a stance on that. But I still think, ultimately, screwing around is what most people do in Pilotwings. And maybe screwing around is not a thing that people do in games as much. And so maybe that's more where the discussion is, but I don't think the discussion should be so much in, like, it doesn't have enough things.
I thought Pilotwings was fine for what it was. I don't know about things, but, like, another location, I think, would have been nice. Woohoo Island's fine, but...
Yeah, I like Woohoo Island. I think maybe another map, at least one other map would have been fine. I like Woohoo Island. I like, you know, when Nintendo said they want to make it like a character, I'm like, you know. But it turns out I actually really like the island. I think a lot of work went into designing that, and I really like the outcome. But over the course of, I don't know how long I played, I think I put somewhere between 12 and 15 hours into the game, which I'm completely satisfied with. But over the course of that time, you become a little too familiar with Woohoo Island.
Uh-huh.
So at least one other map probably could have helped. I do agree with that. But I think ultimately that was a really good game, and it got slammed for things that, like, Pilotwings has never been about. And maybe that's just more about modern sensibilities, really, more than what Pilotwings is about.
I think that was my favorite launch game, actually.
Yeah, that was a really good game. That was a really good game. And then there were two other standout games, I think, at launch. Was Ridge Racer. And I think Ridge Racer suffered a problem of perception, and I know I almost wrote it off because of this. Because it's like, Ridge Racer games are always fucking there at launch, and you just... I don't even see them in launch lists anymore. Like, my mind is just completely tuned them out when I'm looking at a launch list, because they are always there. And I almost wrote this game off, and I'm glad I didn't, because Ridge Racer 3D is actually a really good, you know, arcade action racer. It's no Mario Kart. I would agree that that's probably the superior game. But Ridge Racer was still really good, and I think it's unfair that it got written off.
Mm-hmm.
I think actually Ridge Racer, and combined with the next game that I think stood out, is really like was the 3DS's problem, and not really the 3DS's problem. I think it was a problem with the audience, and I think that problem is perception, is that we judge too many things based on our perception rather than actually looking into them. And unfortunately, this goes for like a lot of people who claim to be hardcore gamers, and they don't want to scratch the surface. And I think that's unfortunate. It's not really hardcore if you're not bothering to scratch the surface. But and that's Ghost Recon Shadow Wars. And if this game was called Advance Wars, there wouldn't be any problem here. Because that has name recognition. But it wasn't called Advance Wars. It was called Ghost Recon, unfortunately. But this was a brand new strategy game from the creator of XCOM. And it's awesome. And it's just, and it's really, really good. Surprisingly really, really good.
And I still never played it. Probably because it was called Ghost Recon.
Exactly. You're part of the problem.
I probably wouldn't have bought it if it was Advance Wars either. I never got into those games.
Oh.
It was called Fire Emblem. If it was called Fire Emblem, I might have.
I actually feel like it might be closer to Fire Emblem. It's not fantasy based. The story's not as good. So maybe it's not that much like Fire Emblem. But like, you don't really have like units of like tanks and things. You have like your units are characters and they have different skills and things. I'm trying to remember. It's been a while since I played. I don't think they permanently die. It's not Fire Emblem like that, but like you're talking about individual characters rather than these generic units. Mm-hmm. You know? But anyway, I look at those three games. I think those are great, and I think it's unfortunate that they're just sort of glossed over. I mean, Pilotwings wasn't glossed over, but I think it got unfairly slammed.
I think my biggest disappointment at launch was Steel Diver.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one. I think that's the case where we can talk about content in a game not being... You know, it wasn't even so much the content was enough. The problem was the concept was too thin to carry the content that it had.
Exactly. And it seemed to lack direction. Like, it was too slow to be, like, arcadey, and it was too, like, simple to be simulation-based. So yeah. I don't even know if they knew where they were going with it.
The only redeeming feature, I think, was the one where you kind of sit in a swivel chair and you spin around with a periscope.
The periscope's fine.
That could have been an eShop game. I would have paid $5-$7, whatever, for that eShop game. I would have been happy with that.
Mm-hmm. But the actual level-based stuff, I just did not like at all.
No. And then there was also a multiplayer sort of board game kind of mode, and I don't...
That thing was awful. That's just a poorly designed game. That's right. A very poorly designed game.
Yeah, so I think that one, a lot of people slam it for its content, and I don't think it's so much content. I think it's just that the concepts were just not... They were too watered down to be of any value, unfortunately.
Yeah.
So I'm with you on that one. But I think overall it's a pretty good launch, and I think a lot of things were just unfairly sort of criticized or overlooked. That's my take on it. But, you know, as we move throughout the year, like, I'm looking, like, you named a few games as what you think of, or must-owns as, like, the big stuff. But, I mean, if I'm looking at the list of games that came out, like Mario Kart 7, Super Mario 3D Land, Kid Icarus, like, I agree with you there. Mm-hmm. Resident Evil Revelations, I think, is a big one. I think Dead or Alive is a big one. It's the first Dead or Alive in some time. And I also think Skylanders is a big one. Partially because it is a big brand being pushed out by Activision, but also because it is a great game. And I think to have, like, six really awesome games in a year is really good. And then you have plenty of second-tier stuff as well, like Sonic Generations or Shinobi. Or, I guess, Sega's whole catalog for a second. And then you have niche stuff like Nano Assault and Dream Trigger, which I think are great games. Not necessarily great games that appeal to everyone, but great games. And you also have Harvest Moon and Bit Trip.
Nano Assault is one that I'm kicking myself for not getting, because that one actually looked really interesting to me.
Is it tough to find now?
I don't know. I just...
Because it's approximately $20 and well worth that. I blasted through that in like a day or two, and that doesn't, and the game's not long, but that's not necessarily a commentary on the game so much as it was how much I enjoyed it. There are a number of ports on there, ports or and or remakes, depending on how you look at it. Because I mean, we have Ocarina, and we have Star Fox, mm-hmm. and Cave Story, and Tales of the Abyss, and Metal Gear Solid 3D. So there are a handful of ports and remakes, but I think those are all like worthwhile ports and remakes. They're not just bullshit that we're throwing onto the system. Like, if you haven't played these games, they're definitely worth picking up. And in some cases, for some of these games, they're still worth picking up even if you already played them.
Yeah, I think either if you've never played them or if you have some, like, hardcore nostalgia for them, then either way, I think it's worth it.
Yeah. We even have, I mean, I think the library is so robust, we even have, like, filler material like Tetris Axis. I mean, to say that the library has filler, like, that's... You know, and so, you know, and I look at these games, and you know, here's the thing with, like, lists. When you list off games, that never changes anyone's opinion. They either become completely way more obstinate in their viewpoint, and they'll dismiss every single game you come up with, or they'll just sort of, like, roll their eyes. Like, lists never change anyone's mind. But, I mean, that's, I sort of feel like if the games that I just said here, this is my ultimate point here, the games that I just talked about here, all these games I just mentioned, came out for, like, the Wii U in the first year, we would not be having this conversation whether they were worthwhile or not. A new Mario Kart, Resident Evil, a new Dead or Alive, Sonic Generations, a remake of Ocarina of Time, would we really be having this conversation about any other platform?
So you're saying that because the DS was so successful, we expect a lot more from the 3DS?
I think that's partially it. And I think it's also, and I think the other issue is, as I was talking about earlier, that the negative perception from launch, which some of it was perfectly fair, I'm not denying that, but that negative perception sort of carried over throughout the year, even though it sort of loosened up a bit. I think the PS3 suffered from that as well early on. I mean, PS3 is so successful now that we don't remember there was a time within the first year or two where people, like, were completely snobbish about it and didn't think it was worth buying.
No, I remember. I remember that perfectly.
And even though it had already built up a decent library of games, and I think that's the case here with the 3DS, that negative perception kept carrying over. But, I mean, I look at this list of games and I go... If this were any other system, we would not be debating whether this system was a success or not. And that doesn't even touch the eShop with, like, Pushmo and Mutant Muds and Sakura Samurai.
Honestly, the eShop's really good.
It is really good.
I think that's one of the best things Nintendo's done on the 3DS so far.
I think so, too.
And just get in there. They're getting their eShop together.
They are. They are, and I hope that's indicative of what they're going to do with the Wii U. I hope that's good, too. And of course, the Virtual Console is also quite nice, too. They've got some really good games on the Virtual Console as well.
Uh-huh.
And I really do feel like if I read this list of games off to anyone, and I didn't say what platform it was for, of course, like something was saying specifically Mario Kart 7 pretty much gives it away, but if you sort of read these games off in regards to an anonymous platform and said this was just the first year, the year that's normally the slowest... I don't think anyone would say, oh, yeah, that's a failure. That's not good at all.
I wouldn't say it's a failure at all, but a lot of those games just don't appeal to me.
And I think that's a perfectly fair standpoint. I mean, I'm not necessarily criticizing you or anyone who shares that viewpoint. I'm just sort of dismayed at the negative perception that still exists because I think this is probably one of the best first years I've ever had with the system. One of the most enjoyable.
Speaking of the negative perception, I mean, in the beginning, a lot of people were, like, actively hoping for the 3DS to fail.
Yeah. Well, people do that all the time, too. People are doing it with, like, the Vita. Like, I'll go to, like... It's stupid.
It's so weird.
You know, I have my grievances with the Vita, obviously, but I don't hope it fails. Like, I'll read articles where, like, they're reporting, like, Japanese numbers. And, of course, the Japanese numbers are, like, three guys walked into a store and bought it that week. But...
I feel bad. The Japanese sales are, like, 10,000 a week now. Yeah. And I'm like, why? Pick up. Like, they're getting good games in there, too. Like, Gravity Rush comes out, the sales didn't bump up. I'm like, why not?
Yeah, give it to me. I'll take it.
Mm-hmm.
And people are saying, like, oh, and you get these people that are like, well, take that, Sony fanboys. You guys were talking shit about the 3DS. Fuck you. You're just as bad. Shut up.
Yep.
You know, actively hoping a system fails is really kind of dumb. But I am immensely happy with this library. And I think I'm immensely happy because I'm the kind of gamer that plays a wide array of games. I play big blockbusters. I play shit like Dream Trigger. And that's why I think it makes me the happiest because there is such a wide swath.
Plus, you just love your handhelds, Craig.
Well, there's that too. and maybe that's maybe the lack of like really big games is a problem for other people. But I don't know. I still encourage people to take a look at games that aren't big. Not necessarily to be like, oh, think how I think, everyone. I'm more important. But just more like, you know, you love video games. Love these video games. Take a look at these ones too.
I just realized, I think for me, it's because I still, like, for me personally, handhelds are, like, a secondary system for me. Like, I focus on consoles first. Like, I'm perfectly fine with a lot of smaller titles on consoles, but I think with the 3DS, because it's a handheld and I game on it less often, I'm more
You want reluctant specifically to, bigger things.
Yeah,
want,
I'm more reluctant to purchase the smaller games.
I see. See, I'm actually more apt to purchase smaller games on there. So maybe actually the fact that it cuts such a wide path is the problem. Now, for me, that's a great asset to say, like, oh, it has big-name games, it has these middle-tier games, it has the niche stuff, it has some really great ports, remakes, it has some really good downloadable content. The fact that it has, like, this broad path laid out for it is ultimately the most appealing for me. But I guess maybe for the general consumer, that's actually more of a liability, because that means less big name, compelling blockbuster games, because there are also all these other things as well.
Yeah, I guess it just depends on your preference for handheld or consoles or whatever.
Yeah, that's a good point. But ultimately, I'm very happy with the 3DS, and I think the future is looking really good. I mean, there's plenty of like Nintendo stuff to look forward to, like. I'm hoping Animal Crossing isn't the same thing for a fourth time in a row or fifth time in a row.
God, I'm crossing my fingers so hard.
Oh, God. Because, I mean, I love the GameCube game. And I even love the DS game, even though it was, like, the same thing, but with, like, real-world holidays taken out.
What was up with that?
I don't know. They wanted to appeal to a wider audience, like, a more global audience, and I can understand that. But they took out those real-world holidays and replaced them with shit like La-Di-Da Day or whatever. Like, if you're going to take them out, I get it, but replace them with something a little more compelling than the crap you put in there.
And then they had, well, they added the multiplayer too, but there was, like, really nothing for people to do with each other.
Yeah.
Like, you could, like, oh, let's all go fish. All right, whatever. This is, I mean, they need to, like, I think they need to have activities, like, actual activities.
People came up with some really good ideas with that, like, you know, the GameCube one had, like, NES games, and that's fine if you want to do that over again because, you know, you don't want to cut into your virtual console sales. But then, like, if I buy, like, a pool table for my house, let me play pool with, you know, with my friends. Put in some mini games in there. Like,
exactly.
I think that would work. I mean, that was a perfectly valid suggestion that a lot of people had, and you still didn't see that happen. And then you had, like, City Folk, or I think in PAL territories it's called Let's Go to the City or something like that. And it was basically the same thing. Like, oh, but we have a city. Yeah, but the city's just filled with the same shit you had in the other game. You just moved it. You didn't do anything.
Yeah, it just took longer to get there, and it was the same stuff.
Yeah, so Animal Crossing is, like, it's strange because, like, it's, like, this franchise with, like, so much potential. So much. And yet Nintendo is, like, totally fine with, like, putting out the same game over again.
I think, correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm pretty sure on, like, screenshots of the 3DS game, it looks like they still have the city, but now it's just, like, up above your own town.
That could be true.
I think that's the way
I'm not 100% sure. They really haven't talked too much about it. Like, you can go swimming and make pants, and then there's, like, real estate. Like, street pass, like, houses, like, model homes you can look at. And I'm like, okay, well, this all sounds neat. I just hope this isn't the extent of the additions you put in, because this stuff sounds nice, but it's not enough, I think. But I am definitely interested in that. Obviously, Paper Mario is a big one. I'm super psyched for that.
Oh, they announced that game so long ago, too.
Well, same thing with Kid Icarus. Kid Icarus is like the first game they showed off for it, and it came out a year later.
All right.
What else? Luigi's Mansion 2.
Mm-hmm.
That looks good. What else does Nintendo have up their sleeves?
I don't know. Nintendo, like, doesn't really show what they have up their sleeves till so close to launch these days. I mean, most of these games we know about are from, like, the first E3.
Yeah, which is strange, because, like you said, most of their games are announced closer to their launch, but these games are all, like, they were announced over a year ago.
Yeah. Mario Power Tennis or whatever it's called.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I'm definitely looking forward to that because it's one of those games I think, you know, because of the kind of game that it is, would look really cool in 3D. Mario Tennis looked good on the Virtual Boy, so I'm assuming it looks like, you know, roughly a million times better on the 3DS.
I sort of really like the way sprites look in 3D. Like, they're very on very separate-looking planes, but I don't know. I like the way it looks.
Sometimes. I think it can work. Unless it's, like, Blaze Blue, and it just doesn't feel really that well integrated.
I haven't seen Blaze Blue in a...
That game was such a 3DS. Lazy game. Oh, man. That was such a lazy... Like, the actual core game, good. It's great. It's Blaze Blue, and it's handled really well on the 3DS. But, like, everything else that goes along with that... The game doesn't even go into sleep mode when you shut the 3DS. Like, how...
What?
Like, yeah. I found that out the hard way because I was... I had to go do something, and so I closed the 3DS between... matches, and then the next match like started up, and I came back and I was at the main menu, and I'm like, what the fuck? Because I had played, I got killed doing nothing. Like, the hardware will go to sleep, but apparently you have to program the software. Whoever's developing the game also has to program the software to go to sleep, and it doesn't go to sleep.
Sounds like the GBA games.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Which is, yeah, and I hate to use the word lazy. When talking about, I think that word gets banded about too much when it comes to development of games. I don't know how else to look at that though. Like, that's bad. You can't use the circle pad. The 3D's bad. There's no online, and it doesn't go to sleep. It's completely hardware agnostic because it doesn't use anything that the 3DS does.
It's in 3D.
It really shitty 3D, but yes, yes it is.
I was thinking more like Mighty Switch Force and Mutant Muds. I think those games look really good.
Oh, those games look 3D. Fantastic. Like, but like Blaze Blue looks like... You remember Color Forms?
I do not.
I don't know how to describe them. Like, they were like... You would get like these glossy like cardboard backgrounds, and then you would take these things that weren't exactly stickers. They like clung by like static to like the backgrounds. You set these little scenes. Like a little character, like Disney had some, I think. Probably look them up. But that's what Blaze Blue looked like. It looked like shitty Color Forms. That's what it looked like.
That's sad.
Yeah, it is. But we get some third-party stuff to look forward to. Obviously, Theater Rhythm's coming out here. And I'm pretty sure Dream Drop Distance is also coming out here. I don't
see how it couldn't.
Well, that's true. I wish Slime Mori Mori 3 will come out here.
That game... Better. I mean, they brought over the second one.
That game has been sitting on the... It's been out in Japan for, like, a while, and Theater Rhythm and Dream Drop Distance are already coming out here, and those came out after Mori Mori 3.
It's probably on Nintendo to bring it over since they've been handling all the Dragon Quest stuff.
Cool, we'll never see America. It. Europe will get it, along with, like, 8 different special editions, and we'll get nothing because Nintendo America...
Come on, Nintendo, bring over Slime Mori Mori.
Yeah.
Needs to happen.
I mean, that's one of my reasons why I want to import, like, a 3DS. Like, also that, and was it Code of Princess?
Yeah.
It's all jokes about, like, no clothing on the heroine aside. The game looks pretty good.
I was watching some videos of it just a couple days ago. It does look pretty good.
Yeah, so I'm disappointed.
Apparently it's made by the lead dude who made the first Guardian Heroes, I guess.
That's my understanding, too, which is, you know, they look so similar.
Mm-hmm.
No announcement has been made about Guild 0101 or whatever. Like, that's that collaborative effort that has like 4 different games in one.
Do I know this thing?
I think who's working on that? Level 5, I know, is working on it. Let me look it up and double check.
Oh, I think I know what you're talking about.
I know Level 5 and Grasshopper are in.
Right. That's it.
So like Suda51's involved and stuff. So that looks really awesome. And I would love for that to come out over here. I mean, Grasshopper's games come out over here. Level 5 game come out over here. So it may still yet come out here. But there's been no word, and that's very disappointing.
Can we just talk about, like, how much bullshit it is that this thing is not region-free?
Yes, because, God, if this thing isn't cracked soon... Because you know what, I can run downloaded games on my Wii because of I have the homebrew channel. I could do all kinds of illicit shit, but I don't. The only thing I use that for is to play games from other regions on my Wii.
Right, exactly.
And I am so pissed that the 3DS is not region free. I hope someone cracks it, because someone doesn't crack it soon, I'm going to import a 3DS. I don't want to spend that kind of money, but I mean, I have a lot of Japanese games. On the DS alone, out of my 202 games or whatever, like 25, 26, 27 of them are Japanese games. And there are a couple of PAL games in there as well. And so, you know what, say approximately 30 games. That's not a small amount of games. I like importing games. And some of us understand more than one language.
And a lot of games are... You don't need to understand a language.
Well, that's true, too.
They're very, very basic video games. Like Code of Princess, I doubt you need to know anything.
Right, exactly. And ultimately, as long as you're buying these through official means, like you buy it through PlayAsia, what's NCSX or whatever it's called, you buy these through these online stores, or even used on eBay, the publisher got their money for the fucking game. Like, you're not ripping anyone off. I want to give you more money. That's all I want, is to give someone more money, and they don't want me to do that.
Stupid.
Can't
especially with a handheld, where you travel all over the world. You get on your airplane with your handheld, you're in another country.
That was Nintendo's original argument with, like, the Game Boy. Like, oh, people travel. People travel with handhelds, so therefore it should be region-free. What the fuck happened to that, Nintendo?
What did happen?
Region locking just doesn't make any sense. And then, like, their argument now, I think one of their arguments was something like, parental controls. With, like, ESRB, because the parental controls, I believe, are based on ESRB ratings. They're based on the ratings particular to that region. How about just put in a parental control that says, don't play anything that I can't fucking understand? There you go. You've just locked your kid out. And really, when is that going to be a problem? You can't go to Walmart and buy a Japanese game. How are you going to, like, oh, this game with this funny writing I can't understand that has some guy's head cut off on the cover. Yeah, little Timmy's totally going to enjoy this game. That's not even a thing.
Well, Vita's region-free and has parental controls, right? How do they handle it?
I have no idea. I don't mess with parental.
Exactly. I don't even know where the hell to find it in the options.
Yeah, PS3 is also region-free and has, I assume, parental controls. So, I mean, you know, just put an extra option that says, do not play games from other regions. Done. Boom. Solved. And I came up with that in 30 seconds. Nintendo could not come up with that, like, at all. And I think really what it comes down to is economics. I think who published Demon's Souls in Europe? Was that Namco, or was it? I don't think it was Atlas. And I think their argument was like, well, so many people imported it. This is a financial liability for us to publish. So many people already have it that want it. They already have it in English. They imported it from North America. So why? I guess they didn't want to initially publish it. No one wanted to pick it up because so many people had it already. And I guess I can understand that, but here's an idea. Publish it faster. Don't wait a fucking year after it comes out to publish it.
That helps.
You know, because then you have the same thing that we're facing here in North America with, like, Xenoblade and, like, The Last Story and stuff, because people have already imported some of these games, whether it's from Europe or Japan. And then you have, like, these Operation Rainfall people, oh, buy it twice. No, fuck you. Fuck you.
Yeah, they need to just get their shit together on this.
Yes, absolutely. There's no reason why they should drag their feet on some of these things. I can understand they look at it and go, okay, well, Doki Doki Majo Shinpan is not going to sell to a Western audience, so we're not going to publish this over there. That's fine. Most Western gamers don't want to touch, like, women with their touchscreen.
I can even understand Captain Rainbow not coming over.
Right, yeah, as annoying as that is. I mean, you really have to sort of understand your audiences, but... Like Code of Princess, where you know where it's like a beat 'em up, or like RPGs, or it's something like this. Like, these games, there's no reason why they shouldn't be over here.
Captain Rainbow is being fan translated, by the way, so I'm looking forward to that.
Oh, cool! Did you buy a copy yet?
I need to get on that.
Oh, okay, I wonder how much it goes for. I got mine for like $15.
That is nothing at all. Where'd you get it?
PlayAsia had it on sale. That was a long time ago.
Yeah, I wonder if they even still have it in stock.
I still haven't played it. I think my copy may even still be sealed.
Ooh, yeah, it's like $62 on PlayAsia.
Wow. I'm glad I jumped on that. And I bought it like not planning on playing it. I didn't have my Wii homebrewed then or anything, so like, yeah, I'll just buy that. Whatever. I'll play it one of these days.
No, but anyway, I don't know. I paid like 70 for like Fatal Frame 4, so I think I could do 62 for Captain Rainbow.
I got so many Wii games like in Japan for like nothing. They were not expensive at all. It was great.
I hate you.
Like the last story, like I think the most expensive one was like Pandora's Tower. And I didn't even pay for that one. Dana did. Dana bought it for my birthday. But even that one wasn't that much, you know. And buying used there is not like buying used here where it's covered in stickers and some guy lost the manual and it's in a GameStop case. Or they're practically mint because they take care of their games. So it's really nice. Anyway, I think we're talking about the 3DS or whatever.
Yeah, 3DS.
Is there anything you'd like to add on the topic of the 3DS?
Yeah, I was sort of, like, making fun of people for the whole screen scratch thing, the lower screen.
Were you making fun of them?
Well, I wasn't making fun. I was poo-pooing it off. Just, like, whatever. But now, after carrying my 3DS around in my pocket, like, every day for a few months, I definitely have, like, some good scratches in there now.
Wow, I still don't have... Yeah, mine's in my bag when I go to work. It's in my satchel all the time. And I still don't have that problem. I took mine across the world, and I still don't have that problem. Not saying that, like, it isn't a problem and people aren't experiencing it, but I haven't. I've yet to experience it.
I think, like, in my pocket, it's a little more tighter and compact in there than maybe in a bag, so I think that's it.
Okay. Well, no, well, mine's in a pocket in the bag. Like, there's a pocket. It's, like, the perfect size for, like, 3DS, so that's where I put it. But, yeah, you might be right.
Yeah, so, I mean, that can definitely happen. That's a thing that can happen. So, even if it doesn't scratch the screen, it's a really poor design to have that plastic just pressed right up against the screen like that.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. I don't have anything like that. Just, I really enjoy the 3DS. I obviously am not happy that it is region locked. but, I mean, I have my game library is like 30 games. I have a bunch of games. I wouldn't say that they're all winners, but I would say most of them are quite good, and I'm very happy with the wide array of games I have to play on the 3DS.
I'm happy with it. I'm glad games started picking up for me. I mean, honestly, it was like a point where I didn't play it for months on end. So I'm glad things are picking up, and a lot of games have been announced I'm looking forward to a lot. Yeah. So I'm happy with it.
Another game I'm looking forward to is Heroes of Ruin. I keep bringing that up, but I think Atari's publishing. Is Atari publishing? No, Square Enix is publishing that one. I hope that comes out soon.
I was about to say, if Atari's publishing, that thing's never coming out.
Well, Atari's publishing... Well, Nspace developed it, and Nspace also developed Roller Coaster Tycoon 3D. Atari's publishing that one. I think Nspace said it was done, and it's in Atari's hands. And... Yeah, you're right. Atari's not... Atari just keeps fucking... I don't know. I don't know what's up with Atari lately. I want to play Roller Coaster Tycoon 3D, but I think we have more of a chance to play Heroes of Ruin first. But I'm looking forward to that one, man. Like, four-player... Is it four or three-player? I forget how many. I think it's four.
It's four.
Online, dungeon-crawling, co-op, looting, and... I still like some of its network functionality where, like, if one player wants to pause the game because they have to go to the bathroom or whatever, enemies just ignore them, and then difficulty automatically scales for the remaining players. I think just stuff... That's really clever. I like that a lot.
Uh-huh.
So I'm definitely looking forward to that one. Hope that comes out soon. Listener questions and comments.
Hey, Craig.
What?
I think I was supposed to give out some games or something.
Well, yeah, but I thought we were going to do that later. But if you want to do that now, if you are so excited to give away these games.
So excited.
So I'm excited, too.
I'm going to be giving out two copies of Ys the Oath and Fel'Ghana over Steam. And they only run on PC, so if you have, like, Mac or Linux or something, I'm sorry, I won't give them to you at all. How do you want to do this? Should we just do the comment thing?
Yeah, let's just do a comment thing, and, what do I want to do in the comments? Just YS, just Ys somewhere in the comments?
Yeah, so go to tvandlust.net, find this podcast, episode 77, and in the comments, just type whatever, leave a comment about whatever, and just leave a... YS in there for Ys. Leave Ys in there somewhere, and use the email address that you want the game to be sent to, because I'll just send you a code straight to that email address if you win. I'm going to be giving out two copies, so there'll be two winners.
Yep. And as a reminder, we won't use your email address for anything other than this contest, because I don't care about your email address.
Yeah. Nobody else could see it.
Yep.
So.
Yep. And episode 77 will be right there at the top of the page. You can't miss it. And if it says episode 78 or any other episode,
you're too late.
You're too late. So Good luck. And Oath and Felghana is an awesome game. I assume you're going to be talking about that a little bit
later. Yeah, I'm going to be talking about it.
Cool. All right. So anyway, then, before I was interrupted...
No, I'm sorry if I want to give people free stuff, no. Craig.
No, I completely appreciate it. We give it away at different points in the podcast. Like, I think more often than not, we give it away after listener questions, but before we talk about games we've been playing?
I can't remember.
And neither can I. We didn't discuss this, so it's perfectly fine. I'm okay with it. I knew we were doing it. I just thought we were doing it later. But listener questions, listener feedback, if you want to get in on this, facebook.com/TVandLust. We'll ask for your input there, and you can feel free to fire away anything you'd like. And first up, we have Jordan, and he asks, thoughts on the new iPad?
I still don't care about it. I mean, I can't picture myself using an iPad on a regular basis, so I still don't care about
it. I don't really have any thoughts specific to the new iPad. Like, I still have my first gen, and, I don't really have any interest in picking, because they're just too pricey to pick one up every year or every other year or whatever, so. But I like the iPad overall. It's very convenient. It's much nicer playing games on there than on the iPhone, because my thumbs are not the size of the entire fucking unit, so I can see what I'm doing. And it's just convenient to surf the web and just kind of dick off with something like that, you know, on the couch or whatever, so I like it a lot. But nothing specific on the new iPad, I would say.
How necessary is the Retina display on that? I mean, the dots per inch are crazy, no?
Because I do have a Retina display on my iPhone, but, I, you know, obviously with the Model 1 iPad, I don't. And there is a difference, but I haven't seen a new iPad in person, so I can't say, like, whoa, this is so much better. I can only compare it to my tiny iPhone versus my large iPad, and it doesn't bother me to go back and forth. So it could be way better, but I haven't seen one in person, so I can't say.
Okay. Holy Aaron's, crap,
what?
There's like a storm brewing outside. I hear trees blowing down or something.
Wow.
Yeah, it's crazy out there. Go ahead, Aaron.
Okay, you can run for shelter later.
All right.
Aaron says, this is my favorite Polish/Mexican video game podcast. Keep up the great work. This is some multicultural shit, right?
Yep.
It's like a melting pot.
Melting pot of beans and kielbasa.
Beans and kielbasa. That doesn't sound too bad. I can go for something.
Nah, that sounds pretty good, like a stew or something.
Andrew says, though, that he's seen better Polish-Mexican podcasts, but we're okay.
We're B-tier Polish-Mexican podcast.
I'll take it. That's fine. And we're B-tier with a little effort. Imagine if we actually put in some elbow grease in this podcast. We could be the best Polish-Mexican podcast ever.
We could. Be at the top of the pile of two.
Yeah, all two of them. John says, it's already been a year for the 3DS. Did it fly by for anyone else?
I wouldn't say it flew by.
I think the year flew by in general, because time just flies for me. It has nothing. It's independent of the 3DS.
Now, it seems like forever ago that I was buying the 3DS, though. Seems like almost longer to a year than a year to me.
Well, I did a lot in the past year, so yeah, I don't know. It seemed, I guess, I don't know. Felt like it went by fast for me. Azam says, let me try and figure this out. What? Shut up! Medal of Honor Warfighter got announced, and not only is it coming to 360, PS3, and PC, but it's also coming to Wii U, and the game is coming out on October 25th, 2012. Also, Assassin's Creed 3 got announced for Wii U. Do you think with both Medal of Honor Warfighter and Assassin's Creed 3 coming out in October and having Wii U versions of these games, do you think that Nintendo will release the Wii U in October?
I have no idea when they release it.
That time frame, like October, November, I think probably makes the most sense.
That's usually when they release consoles anyway, right?
I have no idea. I mean, that's approximately when they... Well, yeah, that's when the GameCube was released. I think that's approximately when the Wii was released, wasn't it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it was November.
Yeah, so... Yeah, maybe. I don't remember when the N64... N64 was released around that time frame, right?
Yep. It was, yeah, October or November, one of the two.
So, okay. Well, there's that. So, I mean, there's a good chance, but I don't think it's necessarily because of these games. But, yeah, I think that's probably around the time frame.
I think a lot of multi-platform games are NDA'd right now. I think once E3 rolls about, you'll see a lot of...
That's probably a good point, yeah.
Multi-platform games are going to be announced for Wii U.
Speaking of Assassin's Creed 3, I actually pre-ordered it.
Did you?
Yeah, I did, because I was buying Kid Icarus, and they had all those awesome steelbooks up behind them, behind the counter.
The steelbooks look so damn good.
And I was like, if I pre-order now, can I just have one of those steelbooks? Like, yeah, you just walk out with them today. I'm like, I'll take one of those, please. So if nothing else, I paid $5 for this steelbook for a game I might not pick up.
But, I mean, honestly, the art on that steelbook, that's really good art.
It is. It is really good art. And not only that, but steelbooks are super nice. I wish more special editions of games, or even just standard editions for, like, maybe a $5 more came in steelbooks, because steelbooks are so nice.
Mm-hmm.
Cliva says, what are your thoughts on the Kid Icarus AR cards? They seem to already be popular to the point where gamers will... crazy for them with exclusive at different places.
Why can't I buy these?
I don't know. Because Nintendo of America, that's your answer. That's done. That's your answer.
I was able to go to, like, stores and buy Animal Crossing cards. I should be able to go to stores and buy Kid Icarus cards.
Maybe that's why.
Are you saying nobody bought the Animal Crossing cards?
What I'm saying is nobody bought e-reader cards, period.
Hmm.
Compare this, like, Nintendo America's like, oh, we'll give them out at events not everyone can go to. And Nintendo Japan's like, here you go, here's some chocolates with these. Fuck Nintendo of America.
The European Nintendo, Club Nintendo, you could, like, exchange, I guess they use stars instead of coins, you could exchange stars for them.
Yes, and I think that's the way it should be done here. We got a few of them for free. Like, you just put in, you just said, yep, I want these, and Club Nintendo sent a few.
Uh-huh.
But there's no other way to get any more. And I watched an unboxing for Kid Icarus by Fingamer, so the European version. And our cards just came in, like, clear plastic wrapping. His cards came in an actual pack, like what it looked like if you want, like, a booster pack at, like, a store.
What the hell?
It was, like, branded and everything, so...
NOA better do something with these, because I need them. I mean, there's a website that's, like, compiling a list of them. They're... And it looks like there may be, like, over 400 of them.
Yeah. I heard this is why I forget where I read this, but I think the Japanese strategy guide, is supposed to have some cards with it. So I hope to get a hold of one of those.
And I know they're different. I mean, they still work. The cards, obviously, they work across regions, but they're different printings even between, like, the
Which
European.
Makes me wonder what they're actually reading.
I'm pretty sure it's the little colors down in the bottom left corner.
Okay.
There's, like, a little stained glass looking picture down there, and it's just a bunch of shapes, and they have different colors on them.
I see. So my thoughts on the AR cards is that they're awesome. I think they're cool, particularly with all the different kind of items in the game. But fuck, Nintendo of America is so hard. it's like everything they do is, like, just shitty decisions for, like, everyone involved.
And I hate their stupid Three Sacred Treasures cards, which they only gave away at their store for the launch game in New York.
That's it.
If you didn't live in New York, you didn't get that card.
Fuck these guys.
This is bullshit.
Rusty says, Theater Rhythm Final Fantasy will be here soon. I'm a happy dude. I think we are too.
Yep.
Bardia, it's been a while. Yeah, it's been a couple of weeks since I left a comment, which is good because I was probably annoying you. I'm not annoyed by that.
Not at all.
No.
Craig, you were. I think you said fuck Bardia at one point.
Did I?
Maybe.
If I did, it was totally in jest, but... I'm questioning because it sounds like something I might say. No offense to Barty, of course.
No, I'm pretty sure you dedicated a podcast to everyone but him or something. I think that's how it went. Which is basically a fuck you, Barty.
Anyway, I've been thinking. The people who leave comments here seem to have very unique and interesting names. Ever noticed that before?
I absolutely have.
Yeah, I think we commented on that. Or you might have at one point.
Seeing as we, like, can't pronounce a bunch of the names and have had to have people, like, tell us how to pronounce them, I'm going to say yeah.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, I actually kind of like that. It's like not only are the hosts multicultural, the listeners are multicultural.
Oh, there's a whole multicultural thing up in here.
Well, I think it's cool that that our listeners are people from all over the world with different tastes, and I like that they provide their input. I like the different voices a lot. I like it a lot. Angel says, Craig, I'm still waiting to purchase my TVless t-shirt. What's the status on them? Oh, and the stickers, too. I'll tell you once I'm not working like 60 hours a week. Yeah, I had told I mentioned before that if I was going to do t-shirts, it'd probably be actually around this time frame. And this was like six months ago or something like that. I don't know. And I was hoping I would have more free time come this period and more money to invest in it. The money's not so much a problem. It's just time. I don't have a lot of it to do this. I would like to do t-shirts. I think other people would like me to do t-shirts. I would just need to take a sabbatical from like everything to get anything I want to get done, you know, to get done. So I don't know. There's no status on them. I'm sorry.
Oh, people are going to like end up just buying iron-on printer things and ironing some TV and Lust logos onto their shirts, which wash off in a couple months.
You know what? I'm fine with it. Craig, I wouldn't be looking to make $1 million from selling t-shirts anyway, so if you want to make your own.
Get some t-shirts out there.
It'd be like Bart Sampson shirts. TV and bust. Yeah, okay. Eduardo says, with the new Neo Geo hand... I'm getting a text message. What do you want? It's Dana. Talk to you later, honey.
Tell her I said hi.
I will do that. the new Neo Geo handheld announced. Would you guys want an old hardware maker to come back into the picture? I want a new SNK console. A man can dream. That'd be nice.
SNK is barely making games anymore.
Yeah, but you know, I mean, if they made a new console, it'd be like $1,200. You know, a new piece of like Sega hardware would be nice.
There is no room in the market.
No, there isn't. The market's never been able to support. I would argue it's never really been able to support three systems.
I'm surprised it's supporting three.
I think it's well, I'm not because, you know, you have the Wii, which is completely different, and that's always been my
alternate route.
What's that?
They did take that alternate route,
right? And that's always been my point, where everyone's like, "Why can't the Wii be more like this, that, and the other thing? You want it to be the same exact thing? That doesn't make any sense. That's not going to help anyone." So yeah, I think that's why I can support it, and I think that's why Nintendo is going the way they are with the Wii U. I think it's a smart way to go myself. I think it's more interesting, and I think it's also more business savvy. But we'll see. But yeah, the market wouldn't be able to support more systems. No way. Tyler says, "What are some of the games on the 3DS you have enjoyed the most?" We didn't really talk about that much. I sort of shot out a wall of speech about all the games on there.
Yeah.
You go first.
All right. Actually, one of my favorites, and it's really short and it's somewhat simple, but I just really, really love Mighty Switch Force.
It's a good game.
I think it like harkens back to really just like 16-bit game philosophy, where you just have an idea, you can do a few different things with that idea, and just use the most out of it.
Which I think is a lot like Mutant Muds. Have you played that yet?
I have played Mutant Muds. I think Mutant Muds is a little simpler, but it's longer, I guess.
It is simpler, yes.
But no, that's also really good too.
I'm sort of like torn about what I would call my favorite game on like on the 3DS. I mean, I really enjoy Dead or Alive. I really enjoy Mario 3D Land. Resident Evil Revelations was fantastic, and you know, we're recording this on Sunday, March 25th. So Kid Icarus has only been out for a couple days here in North America. But even in that short time, I think it's already a contender for, like, my favorite game. Like, it's really up there. It's really, really good.
Uh-huh.
Skylanders has been great. And even some of, like, the lesser-known games, like Nano Assault and Dream Trigger, I really enjoy.
Yeah, I think I, like, list most of the games I liked
on Yeah, yeah, thing. Me too.
Mario Kart 7, Super Mario 3D Land. That's good.
Yeah, I think so, too. Azam says, oh, and by the way, what first-person shooter are you most interested in this year? Halo 4, Call of Duty, Black... None of these. Absolutely none of the ones you listed. Black Ops 2, Medal of Honor Warfighter, none of them. He says he's looking forward to Medal of Honor Warfighter the most. Just watched the trailer, and the trailer was good. Hopefully the game is better than the trailer. Well, yeah, I'm pretty sure, because you can probably play with the game, right? I mean, I think that's what the goal... You can play the game, not the trailer.
You know, I usually like Halo games for some couch co-op through the campaign, so I guess out of those, I'm looking forward to that to the most.
Okay. I mean, yeah, I guess by default, like de facto, I would be looking forward to Halo 4 the most, but that's not to say that I'm necessarily looking forward to Halo 4.
As long as they keep their couch co-op campaign, I'll probably get it eventually.
Yeah, I think I'll probably get it eventually, too, because I think... I think I own all of them. I don't own, like, the remake of, like, Halo 1. I don't own Halo Wars. But otherwise, I own all the Halos, so.
I don't get the last part of his comment. How many tables can I flip in 30 seconds?
Yeah, how many tables can you flip in 30 seconds?
I don't know. It depends on how heavy the table is. I guess if it's more than, like, 20 pounds, it's zero.
Zero. I love it.
But, no, I have no idea. That's weird. That's a weird question, Isan.
Josh says, so far I'm pleased with my day one purchase of the 3DS. True, not a lot of games were available in the beginning, but thanks to its backwards compatibility, I was able to work on my DS backlog with games like Okamiden and Radiant Historia. My question is, how do you guys take so long to keep a game in its shrink wrap? I normally take the shrink wrap right when I get the game at my house.
I don't know. Sometimes I just, like, buy a game and put it on the shelf because I'm playing something else at the time.
Yeah, I do that. I do that, too. And people are like, why do you do that? And it's like, well, because I intend to play this game at some point, and it just so happens right now it's cheap.
Exactly.
So I bought it while it's cheap, which is the smart thing to do, because otherwise you end up with a $62 copy of Captain Rainbow, and I leave it on the shelf until I can play it.
Or sometimes I just need something to pad my Amazon purchase so I get free shipping.
I do that, too.
I need $5 more. Is there like a $10 game somewhere I can find that I want? And then, yeah. That happens.
Yep, exactly. Sean says, hey, boys. I'm loving the 3DS. I picked mine up around Christmas time. I already have like 12 retail titles and a whole slew of downloads. I think it's a fantastic system with tons of potential. One of the things that I think is hugely underutilized, however, is the Street Pass function. That's, if you live in North America, that's why it's underutilized, because that is such a, it's such an awesome social thing. Like, the whole thing with, like, the, like, Find Me, this Street Pass thing is so cool. It's just that we are so fucking spread out here with no public transportation or anything like that in the U.S., unless you live in a major city, and, That's why, you know, you don't really see it.
Things like theme parks and zoos and stuff like that, those are good for street passes.
Yeah, or conventions, obviously.
Conventions,
like,
yeah.
A PAX or like a Comic-Con. Those are good ways to get some street passes, yeah. I mean, sometimes even at the mall, like if you happen to wander past like a GameStop or something like that, you might get something, but...
I've tried the mall. I was actually at a hotel last week, I think, and I actually did get a street pass at a hotel.
Oh, nice. I'm curious to know what you guys think of Street Pass. What do you like / dislike? Well, we like it. I think I like,
yeah, what
we just agreed to. Where would you like to see it go? I don't know. I mean, if we're talking about specific games, I mean, I don't know, because I think... I mean, it really depends on the game, and I think some games use it in interesting ways. I mean, like Kid Icarus, you can trade items, like weapons you found, and in Mario 3D Land, it, like... reopens up, like, those mushroom houses or whatever the heck they are, those item houses.
So. I think Street Fighter 4 has one of the coolest ones because you actually, like, build a little team out of, like, trophies that you win in the game, and each trophy has, like, different stats, and you can only use so many stats in your team. And then your trophies, like, Street Pass battle other people's trophies.
Oh, yeah, that's right, yep. So it's really game contingent, but I think it's been used in interesting ways so far. For some reason. Naturally, since many of us don't live in bustling places in this country, we don't get to benefit from this function the way that that others might. Do you think that that makes it doomed in the West? Not necessarily doomed. I think Nintendo, like, there are some pieces in the new, like, puzzle. What is that? What is that called? What's the puzzle game called?
What is it called?
Puzzle Me? I don't fucking know.
And I mean, Find Me is easy to remember. I don't...
Yeah, I forget what
the hell is it called? Puzzle something? Puzzle, yeah. Swap.
Puzzle,
right?
Swap. Yeah, I think there are already pieces. Nintendo's already implemented pieces that can only be exchanged by Wi-Fi, if I'm not mistaken. So I think they're sort of understanding that, like, it's not as easy for us in other countries to utilize that.
Man, speaking of which, I get, like, street passes, and I see other people puzzle swap pieces. They'll hardly have anything for me to choose from.
Yeah.
I got one person from Japan. They had, like, almost every single puzzle completely full. I was like, God damn it. And I could only choose one piece of theirs.
But, I mean, like if you're friends with someone, I think, like, maybe... an interesting compromise would be, like, if someone on your friends list, like, once a day... once you hit, like, well, maybe not even just once a day, maybe, like, once per hotspot per day, you randomly, you know, do a street pass with someone on your friends list. I think that could be, you know, a good compromise for the West.
Yeah. That work.
He says, personally, I would like to see more games or ideas similar to Find Me or that cookie picture collecting game, as I think they are a lot of fun. He couldn't remember the name either.
He couldn't.
I also wonder about the possibilities of StreetPass being expanded to the web somehow to give us country folk a way to interact with others. Well, yeah, I mean, you know, like I just suggested, I think that's a good compromise because you don't want it to be exploited. You know what I mean? Like, it doesn't really matter because none of that stuff really amounts to anything. But if you want to make it fair, I think, like, you know. Yeah, one random friend on your friends list per hotspot per day. I think that's a good compromise. I think that could work for us.
I don't think that's bad at all.
Idio says, my 3DS wept quietly in the corner for so long, wrought with jealousy at the attention showered upon her older brother, the DSi XL, and feeling denied of being allotted a fair chance. Her spirits rose on occasion when I picked her up, only to fall once again when she realized they only meant to use her as ballast to hold the corner down on a new game board. Where is this going? Then I took a picture of for the TVMS forum. Perhaps one day she won't spite me for the absentee father. This is the purplest writing. I know it's on purpose. But now that Vita has entered our lives, she knew her fate was written until I gave her to my oldest daughter. The 3DS is now jubilant, with never a moment passing without receiving love filled with a sincerity she could never imagine. Her newest friends, PSP and Wonderswan, welcome her to the purse, and she was quickly adorned with Harajuku mini stickers and bedazzled jewels. What?
Come on, in one more sentence.
I'm going. I pick her up for visitation from time to time, but I can tell. She's only biding her time until she gets returned to the purse, which she calls home.
Oh, I'm glad your daughter is enjoying the 3DS.
I am as well. I'm going to take a sip of water. Andrew says, I've got 5 3DS games, all of which are pretty good. It's a pretty good handle with a lot of games I'm looking forward to getting.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
I think that's a fair assessment. Sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
Brandon says, I've got about a dozen 3DS games and all of my consoles fell to the wayside. Such a great handheld with an unwarranted wave of negativity behind it. And the Vita's lineup looks so mediocre to me, but people ride its balls so hard. But maybe I'm just weird. I guess my question is, why won't the DS fucking die? I love that thing, but developers still seem opposed to give the 3DS the support that it needs.
I mean, even like the Pokemon company is still supporting this thing. Like, I mean, with their Nabanuga's Invasion.
Yeah.
What is this? Yeah. And, I mean, of course, the Black and White sequels.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, but we're also getting, WayForward's doing the Adventure Time game for the DS.
Uh-huh.
That's okay, because, I mean, it's backwards compatible. I think the it's sort of like a business thing where it's like, well, we can hit both audiences at the same time. And you're right, it does sort of hurt the 3DS dedicated library a little bit, but I think you saw a similar transition with the PS2 and PS3, and the PS3 is doing okay, so.
The GBA, there were still a good amount of games coming out when the DS launched, right?
That's true, too. And the DS launch was even rockier than the 3DS's, so.
Mm-hmm. Because I remember playing, Kingdom Hearts that I had just bought on my DS.
Yeah.
The Kingdom Hearts Chain of Memories.
Yep. Sounds about right.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the Vita's library is good. I can't explain it. I enjoyed the 3DS more. I think I tried to explain. You know, to me, like, it felt more even. I feel like with the Vita, there's too many surprises with how the games operated and how the system operated, and it just kind of turned me off. But I don't think it's mediocre so much. I think it's quite good. Like, Luminous and Wipeout, those are very good games. Silver Mongoose says, if the 3DS was the same, minus the 3D aspect, would you feel it was worth the upgrade from the DS? Yes, absolutely.
Yep.
Because even though the 3D is, like, the namesake for the whole device, and as much as I like it, too, because I use it the vast majority of the time.
It's not going to make a bad game good.
Right. And it's not going to ruin a great game. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it would totally be worth the upgrade. Still a great system with great games. So, Sally Smith says, Craig, I just bought a minty crisp and sealed original copy of Mega Man 6 for $40. You jelly? Yeah?
Dude, I love sealed NES games. I don't know what it is.
We got a whole mess of them in at the Toy Vault, man. We got a sealed Battletoads. Sealed Battletoads, man. And we actually had two copies. We had two sealed Battletoads. Now, the sealed Battletoads goes for about $250.
Holy shit.
Right, right. Now the other sealed Battletoads wasn't quite sealed. The plastic was ripped. And unfortunately, you can't sell that as sealed because people are like, oh, it's ripped. Like, it's so close to being sealed, but, like, it just doesn't count. So he took the plastic off, and that's worth $40. Like, the value just plummets from $250 to $40 for that plastic. And no, it's never been used. Like, the game, like, is not – it's not sealed, but it's still new. Like, the game's never been played. It's still, like – the cartridge is still upside down. It's plastic inside the box.
I own one sealed NES game, and I bought it for, like, $5 off eBay. It was really damn cheap. And I don't want to open it. It's called Mechanized Attack. Mechanized Attack. It's a Zapper game made by SMK.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. So I sort of want to play it, but I don't want to open it.
I bought Snake Rattle and Roll brand new, and I opened that up because I wanted to play it.
Yeah, I played that in the hospital. That's good stuff.
Don't care. I'm tempted to buy that. I didn't buy that Battletoads that we have at Toy Vault. It was $40, and it's, like, brand new, and I'm like, man, Battletoads brand new for $40. And plus my discount. But the problem is, like, Battletoads is such a game that pisses me off. Like, I can't even... Like, I wanted to say bad game, but maybe bad isn't appropriate, but the game is just way too hard. And you think, oh, I'll play two players to mitigate how hard it is. Nope, because you just get kicked in the face by your dude because you got in the way.
Just buy the Genesis version.
Yeah, they come in a nice cardboard box that's, like, brand new that's sitting there mocking me that I get.
Yeah, I guess.
Because, like, 20% off, what is that? So, $8 off? So, yeah, it's $32 for me.
$32 is a lot of money to spend on, like, something that'll just piss you off.
Yeah, well, you know, I was thinking about it. I ended up buying Batman. We had pretty much a brand new copy of Batman at the Toy Vault.
I love Batman on NES.
So I bought that. There's no shrink wrap on it, but it's a lot like Battletoads, where it's pretty fucking new.
Mm-hmm.
So I bought that instead because that was $20. But anyway, yeah, we got all these sealed games, man. We got Metal Gear. Ultima Exodus, or Exodus Ultima, whatever it's called. I played it as a kid, man. That game pissed me off. I had no idea what the fuck was going on.
I don't think I've ever played that.
We have Clash at Demon Head, which was a band, and Scott Pilgrim was named after that game.
Oh.
We got some good stuff. I have Clash at Demon Head, but I have the cartridge only. That game's a pain in the ass to play with the cartridge only, because there's information that's not vital. Like, it's not exactly like the Star Tropics code, uh-huh, but, like, it makes the game, like, really tedious. It's like a map. Like, there's, like, this map screen. There's all these different routes, and you don't know what all the route names are until you're, like, at a junction between two of them. Then you know the ones that are surrounding them, you know what they're called, but you don't know what they are until you get to that point. So you don't know where you're going. You're just sort of wandering around until you get there. I need to go to this route. Well, but it's in the manual. So it's like, son of a bitch. Like, I wanted to buy it, but it's like, it costs more because it's sealed, obviously. And it's like, well, I'm just going to open it. So, like, paying more for the sealing just doesn't make a difference to me.
You probably just buy the manual. I mean, a lot of eBay auctions have just tons of manuals.
Yeah, but if I'm going to go that far, I kind of want to get it boxed. There's a nice box art, too. You know, only the, like, box art, like, only the 80s can provide.
And was she looking at a picture that compares the Japanese cover to the American cover? And it's pretty funny.
For what, Clash of Demon Head?
Yep.
I haven't seen it.
Because the Japanese cover's like super deformed anime.
Oh, really?
American, yeah.
I think, like, was it Athena for the NES was a lot like that. I think SNK did that. And, oh, man, it's hilarious. Like, we got, like, this, like, you know, generic 80s fantasy art, like Conan the Barbarian or whatever. And then, like, the Japanese art for, like, Athena is, like, a super cute, curvy anime girl in a bikini.
Yep. Actually, I really like the Dragon Warrior boxes compared to the... I mean, the Dragon Quest boxes are good on the Famicom, but I still like the Dragon Warrior boxes that we got in America. They're pretty good.
And let's see here. Montana has a couple of comments here. He says, I feel like news articles on a lot of sites are written like reviews where the article has a filler introduction before it gets to the real news. Joystick! Joystick. I find myself searching for the important news in it rather than reading the whole thing. I feel like news should just be news. I personally don't like all the sugarcoating. Am I the only one who feels this way or has noticed this?
Oh, that's – Craig revamped our whole news thing just for that. He's all, we need to make this shit more succinct.
Yeah. And I mean, I see why they put this filler content in the news. They want people to read their news as only that site can provide because it has those staff members, like, commentary. And I understand that. But he's totally right. Like, I can't get news from Joystick because it's like 8 paragraphs of shitty jokes – and then, like, one sentence buried in there, the actual news that I want. And I don't like that. I don't mind a little bit of commentary. We do that from time to time. We'll throw in an extra sentence or two of commentary. And I think that's perfectly fine. There's nothing wrong with that. Mm-hmm. But just, yeah, I can't stand all the filler that people put into their news.
I mean, they also get to give you a reason to click a whole link for it.
Well, right. And that's it, too. But I think... Yeah, it's just not enough for me. I don't. Your crappy jokes are not enough for me to click a link.
Yeah.
And then he also follows up, but keep up the good work, guys. Accidentally press enter, so cut this off. Well, thank you for taking the time to post another one telling us to keep up the good work. We appreciate it.
We'll also just keep up the regular work we do.
We'll keep up the mediocre work as well. It's no problem. That's easy enough. So that wraps it up for listener feedback. Again, facebook.com/TVNList. And while you're at it, when it comes to social networking, you can follow me on Twitter. I'm at TV and Lust. Seth is at het, H-E-T, underscore, Nikik, N-K-I-K.
So bad.
That's all good, man. You can be a Jawa. I'm cool with it.
I would change that, but it's just too late at this point.
Well, everyone that's following you would continue to follow you. But then, like, everything that's linked to your name, it'll just go to, like, that user doesn't exist. It doesn't update, like, links. Now, on the site, I have no problem. I can change all the links, but that's up to you if you want to change it.
Whatever.
You're like, whatever. I'm a jaw with an underscore. It's all good.
An underscore and a cake. We can do that.
All right, cool. So let's talk a little bit about games I've been playing lately. If you don't mind, I'd like to start off.
All right.
I've been playing a little bit more of Kingdoms of Amalur. And normally I don't. Usually I reserve games that I have played in the intervening week. In this segment, because no one wants to hear me retread the same shit over and over again. Mm-hmm. But I was picking up Kid Icarus, and not only did I reserve Assassin's Creed 3, I also bought the Kingdoms of Amalur guide. And I don't think this guide was available at launch. I think it's a post-launch guide. And it's the biggest strategy guide that I own. The biggest strategy guide I've ever... It's 600 pages.
Holy shit.
It's a 600-page guide with a hardcover. It was mad nice. And now GameStop has this thing where, like, if you buy the game and the guide together, you get 20% off the guide. And I don't know if their system did something different because this was a post-launch guide, but because I bought Kid Icarus, because I bought a game with it, I still got the 20% off. And so I paid about $21 for this guide, which is pretty good because some of these hardcover guides get expensive.
Uh-huh.
I think Skyward Swords, I think I paid $40 for.
Damn.
Which is, like, ridiculous. But I still paid it.
Why would you even need a guide for that game? Just press the 2 button, dude.
Yeah, just like the, just like there's that
fire. Or just watch every cutscene. I don't know.
Right. It's because I have the other hardcover. I'm still missing one of them. I'll get it off of eBay. I forget. It's one of the DS ones. I forget. But I have the other hardcover guide, so I figure why not. But you know, I like the hardcover guide. Some of them come with like soundtrack samplers. Some of them come with like cloth maps. And I think this is a good idea because like the strategy guide business. Not a good business to be in after the advent of the internet.
Yeah.
So you know, the only way to really survive is to make the guides collectible, which gets suckers like me to buy them.
You got to put in the art and the cloth maps and stuff.
Right. And I'll buy it. So, you know, $21 for this guy, I totally jumped on it, and that got me back into playing the game a little bit more. And I love this game. You know, I already put in about 25 hours, which for, like, an open world, like... Western RPG is really not that a lot. They're really not that much. People put in like 100+ hours into games like this, but it's a lot for me considering I play so many other games. And the fact that I'm still coming back to it on top of that, I think says something. Just, I love this game. I'm not even that huge into open world games because I find them to be, you know, directionless. But I love that the combat is way more action based than, you know, like Skyrim, which is more like Rock'em Sock'em Robots or something. I like the art style. It's not sterile. It's not generic. I'm even think I'm warming up to some of the, you know, mythos in the world, which is like, normally I just skip through this shit. I don't care. This will kill things. But like the whole like House of Ballads quest line in this game. So like, they're like these magical immortal creatures called the Fae. And I don't really understand like their power structure, but like there's this one area called the House of Ballads. And I guess they run it. I guess that's a particular sect of the Fae. I don't really understand. But, like, their whole thing is, like, they reenact, like, songs from, like, their history over and over again. They reenact, like, these things.
And do they have, like, obsessive compulsive disorder?
No, I guess that's just how they operate. That's how they tell their story. That's how they relive their history. Almost like Civil War reenactment, but I don't know. So
they just do it nonstop?
I don't really know. Maybe I skipped through that part. Maybe they didn't explain it. But that you sort of get wrapped up into it. Like, I think someone dies or something like that, and you have to take their place within these stories, within these ballads. So then you start reliving these, you know, you start doing these adventures that they've already lived. And because your whole role in the game is the fact that, like, you can change history, you can change your destiny, and no one else can. Like, I guess, you know, fate plays a big factor in the people's lives in this world. And like, because you died and were resurrected, you've completely destroyed that fabric. Like, you can change things. Not only is your fate unwritten, you can affect the fate of other people. And so like, you're the only person that can really take the place in these ballads because you're the only person that can really change that kind of stuff. So it actually became kind of interesting. Of course, it's all like an exposition dump. You talk to people for like 20 minutes and they explain things awkwardly to you because that's what Western RPGs do. But like, the whole concept was really interesting and I liked that.
Sounds actually pretty cool.
Yeah, I really like this game. And I think, you know, if you enjoy action RPGs or Western RPGs or anything like that, I mean, you know, don't be afraid to wait for a price drop for the barrier of entry to lower, but I think, you know, I paid full price and I don't regret it. I mean, the game is huge and it's a lot of fun. I definitely really recommend it. Even if you're not a fan, I mean, like I said, I'm not a fan of open world games, so even if you're not a fan, I still recommend it. At least try out the demo anyway. I also played some Uncharted 3, and I think I'm done with this game. I took like a week off. Because I think the last time I talked about it was frustrating me. And so I took a week off, and I came back, and that didn't improve.
No?
And I think...
What killed it for you?
Well, I'm still in the boat area, this boat graveyard or whatever. And I don't like it. I don't think it should have made it past playtesting, because it's the most joyless thing I've ever played. And I remember when Chris was talking about this game, and I asked him, oh, does being on the water affect, like, your movement and your aim? That sounds really cool. And I think that's what Naughty Dog was thinking, too. Like, oh, this sounds really great on paper. Until you play it, and you're trying to aim at people, and you can't, because you're stumbling around, and your aim is all over the place. Meanwhile, your enemies have no problem. And it's just really, really aggravating. So, like, in one area, for instance, I had people on a ledge firing, like, I don't know what they were. They looked like sparklers at me, but they detonated after they hit the ground. So, like, these grenades or something, these bombs. Then you have this one dude in a huge suit that takes, like, 8 shotgun blasts at point blank to take off. He's got a huge Gatling gun. Then you got a bunch of other dudes running around with shotguns. And meanwhile, the waves are rocking, you know, the area that you're on. So not only can't move all that well, like, you can't aim all that well. I'm like, this is the biggest load of bullshit ever.
Yeah, that sounds not. I mean, it sounds, yeah, like you said, that sounds good on paper, but.
Right, exactly. It sounds really cool.
If it's not fun to play, then scrap it.
Yeah. And what kills me, what makes it even worse, is that everyone I've talked to says, oh, the whole boat area doesn't really make a big difference to the story. Why the fuck is it here then? Why am I doing this right now? I'm so annoyed. I'm so annoyed. And what killed it for me is I got to this one area, and, it looks like a theater or something of some kind on a boat. And Drake's like, as soon as you walk in, he's like, oh, I should play this quiet or something like that. And I'm like, oh God, no. I think stealth in video games isn't that fun in general. Like, it takes a lot of effort to make that interesting. And some games can do it and some can't. And I don't think Uncharted can. The problem is, the primary components of Uncharted is climbing shit and shooting shit. Now, when you're sneaking around, it sort of takes away from those things that the game does well. You're not doing those things. You're doing something else that it doesn't do nearly as well. Because when you have climbing, you have shooting, there are multiple facets to these systems. I mean, you have multiple weapons, you have grenades, you can throw propane canisters during firefights. When you're climbing, you can swing, you know, sometimes things break, you're jumping over here. Like, these are fairly robust systems. Stealth amounts to clunkily hiding behind a box. That's the extent of stealth in Uncharted. It's not nearly as robust. It's not nearly as interesting. It's not handled well at all. And then it's forced on you in this segment because if you look around the room and you go, "Oh, it's like five dudes, I can take this." As soon as the first gunshot goes off, like, million people come pouring into the room. And you're like, son of a bitch. And it's not even clear where you're supposed to be going. This goes back to the visual noise I was talking about last time I talked about it. I can sneak around this room all I want. I'm not even sure where I'm supposed to be sneaking to. And I got to that point, and I'm like, I can't handle this anymore. It's making me do things that the game doesn't even do well. If you're going to force stealth on me, if you're going to force a gameplay mechanic on me, make sure it's done well. Because otherwise, I'd rather be climbing and shooting. I'd rather be doing the things you do well. But you don't do this well, so I don't want to do it.
That's too bad.
Yeah. So, and I think another problem is, like, I mean, if I want to compare, like, Uncharted 1 to, like, a recipe, right? People often say that Uncharted 2 is an improvement over Uncharted 1. And I think in a very general sense it is, but I don't think it's an improvement so much that they actually improved on the recipe from Uncharted 1. I think they kind of threw out the recipe and started again. It doesn't, even though it's still the same climbing and shooting, they're handled in completely different ways. You know, it's not climb a tower, drop into an arena, shoot a bunch of shirtless dudes. That's all Uncharted 1 was. Uncharted 2, it's still climbing and shooting, but they handle it completely differently. And that's why it was a success, because they threw out the recipe, started with a new recipe, and that recipe was much better.
Same ingredients, though.
Right.
Same ingredients, different recipe.
Now, with Uncharted 3, because Uncharted 2's recipe was so well-received, they started with that with a baseline and then just started throwing in a bunch of shit that they had hanging around the kitchen. And I don't feel like it worked. I feel like they should have... I don't know what they should have done. I can't say what they should have done, but I don't feel like what they did do was all that compelling. You know, the transition from Uncharted 1 to 2 worked well because there was a fundamental change somewhere in there. 2 to 3, there is no real change. It's just bigger and noisier, you know? And I don't think that works as well because I think 2 was the apex of what they could have done with that recipe. And I think just adding stuff ruins it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, they're sort of like... They sort of, like, developed themselves in a tricky spot there, though, because, like, how do you improve over what you've already did, like, so damn well?
I agree. I completely agree. I don't know. I don't have any suggestions for that. I can only say what I feel about what they've done. I don't actually have any working suggestions for what they could have done. But I'm just franchise? Not feeling it. Yeah. So I'm just not feeling it, so I put it back in the box, which is a shame, because I finished the other three games, and I'm, like, approximately halfway through this one. And I wish I could fish. Maybe one day in the future I will, but right now it's just not fun. It's just not fun. I'm not having fun, so it's unfortunate. Put it back in the box.
It sucks.
It does. Because I did enjoy 2 a lot, and 2 had its faults, but I really, really enjoyed it, and I'm just not enjoying 3. And finally, I played a lot of Kid Icarus Uprising on the 3DS, and this game is phenomenal. I'm not super hot on the controls. It does use stylus input for aiming, and pretty much every first person shooter on the DS used this, and I'm used to it. I played a ton of Metroid Prime Hunters. I agree, it's probably not the most comfortable, best thing ever, but I don't think it's terrible either, and I'm used to it. But Kid Icarus, it doesn't have like an invisible bounding box that like your stylus pushes against when you turn. To turn, you have to like flick your stylus as if you were scrolling through your contact list on your iPhone. And I think that's a little too much. I think if you're going to ask people to use an unconventional control scheme, in this case the stylus, don't I don't think it's a good idea to make it even more unconventional by making them flick to, like, look around. That's a little awkward, especially in the heat of battle. Mm-hmm. You can get used to it. I'm used to it. It's completely functional. I have no problem with it. I still don't think it was a good idea. What are your thoughts on those controls?
I'm still, like, I'm wondering why the whole flick thing is there. I guess maybe they needed to implement a way to turn around extremely quickly. Because, I mean, it works fine in Metroid Prime Hunters. I played Metroid Prime Hunters. You could turn around okay. I don't know. I can't remember, like, how fast you spin around when you bring your stylus to the end. So, yeah, I'm a little confused about why they went with the whole flick-to-turn thing.
Well, Metroid Prime Hunters, you can adjust the size of the bounding box and adjust your turning speed. Like, there are a lot of options to make that comfortable for everyone. Because I think, who worked on that? I forget who. But they must have understood.
That was NST?
Okay, NST. They must have understood that, you know, you're already working with an unconventional control scheme. You might as well make it as convenient and as comfortable for the user as possible. And they did that. And I think Metroid Prime Hunters is wonderfully playable, despite its unconventional control scheme. Kid Icarus is going to turn some people off. I wish there was a demo for it, so that you could try it out. Maybe there will be in the future. Because I think you can definitely get used to it, but I still don't think that makes it ideal.
Yeah, I don't think it's... Honestly, I don't think it's too bad. I got used to it fairly quickly, so I don't know. I think if people stick with it for even just a little bit, they could get used to it.
Right. I agree. But I think it still says something that despite the fact I have strong feelings that this is not a good control scheme, I still fucking love the game. It is, I would say, is the best game I've played so far this year. You know, we're a quarter of the way through the year. I think it's probably the best game. And it might be my favorite game on the 3DS. It is so good. The single player, each chapter is broken down into two parts. You have a flight sequence that lasts about 5 minutes because Palutena can only support Pit flying for about 5 minutes. So you have this whole, like, rail shooter segment. It's a lot like Sin and Punishment. And that, man, the sense of speed and movement in there is so thrilling. Like, when Pit comes flying up over a mountain and then you see, like, this, you know, valley spread out below. I mean, it's just, it is amazing.
It's really beautiful. I'm going to say, though, it's actually, like, harder for me to get used to the flight controls than it is the ground controls.
Oh, that's interesting. I have no problem with flight. I love it.
Because I'm used to playing, like, Star Fox, where your aim and your movement is tied to one thing.
Well, that's why I said it's probably a lot like Sin and Punishment, where they're independent.
I had a lot of trouble with getting used to Sin and Punishment, too.
Gotcha.
I mean, at least the Wii sequel. Because the first game, too, I don't know. Well, you move with the... You actually move with the C buttons on the N64 game. And yeah, I don't know. I didn't think that was too bad. But for the Wii game, both the Wii game and this Kid Icarus Uprising, it's really hard for me to get used to. It's like sort of like patting my head and rubbing my stomach at the same time for me.
It is a little bit like that. I can understand that. Yeah. So, I mean, to clarify for the listeners who haven't played the game, you move during flight. You move Pit with the circle pad and you aim with the stylus. So it's two independent things. It's not like Star Fox where your reticle follows your character. They're two independent things. So you're dodging and shooting in different directions.
Mm-hmm.
I actually have no problem with that. I have zero problem with that. But it's a lot of fun. And then after about 5 minutes, you're on the ground in these dungeon segments. And that's where those controls we were talking about earlier come into play. Like I said, they're manageable. And during course of play, you find all these different weapons. And they fall into different categories. There are blades, there are bows, orbiters, which are like these little orbs that follow you over your shoulders, like shoulder cannons. And they all have ranged and melee stats. But what's really cool is, like, you can find two weapons of the same kind. They can be both blades, both samurai blades, but they'll have completely different stats. They'll be just basically two different weapons, really.
Uh-huh. The stats are like powers and effects too. Like, you have like +3 speed or like paralyze effect on the weapons, stuff like that.
Yeah, and it's super addictive. I wish you found weapons at a faster rate. But what's really neat is that during single player, you can bet hearts, which are, you know, the currency of the game. You earn these as you defeat enemies. You can basically wager hearts to up the intensity, which is more enemies. It's more difficult. But there are more treasures to be found the higher the intensity. So you can do that. I don't recommend doing that right away. I started out about, like, level 3 or so when I first started playing. I'm playing level 5 with some mild challenge. I went back and played the first chapter on 7, and I got through that without too much of a problem. But, yeah, I mean, the game can definitely be challenging. It definitely challenges you.
Now, I've only played through the first two levels single player, so I haven't played that much. But I did play a good couple hours of multiplayer last night with you, Craig.
Yeah, we played Seth and I played with Pete Doerr from YouTube. I'm sure many of our listeners know Pete. I played the night before with Pete, as well as Holly from the Dog in My Lens channel. As well as, I believe one of our listeners, Cliva, was involved in that game as well. And, man, I had a fantastic time. Played for 3 hours straight. It was brilliant. It was probably the best multiplayer experience I've had in probably, like, a year at least. I had so much fun. I made a great time last night, too. In multiplayer, you have team battle, light versus dark, 3-on-3. And then you have free-for-all. And I don't like free-for-all as much because it's pretty chaotic, especially when you have the different weapons and the different items and the different effects all in play, and you have like all six players like right there, like shooting, like some of these weapons, some of the range attacks fire like giant like orbs, like these huge like orbs clear across the screen.
The club weapons, they have big ass things that they shoot out.
Right. So you have those, someone's firing a laser beam, someone threw out a smart bomb item, someone has like one of those eye turrets set up, and meanwhile someone's weapon has like petrify effect, so everyone's all frozen, getting all fucked up. Like,
and then just the area effect items too, where they just like have a big dome that like poisons you or electrocutes you or something.
The area of effect ones are huge. Like they're huge areas.
They're really big.
So it's a little too chaotic for my taste in free for all. But light versus dark team battle is awesome. You have obviously three players on light, three players on dark. Not really affected by whether you're light or dark. Doesn't really matter. What happens is at the bottom of the top screen, you have this meter, and it's split in half, and one half is light, one half is dark. And as, say, like, players on the light team die, their meter goes down as each person dies. Now, the last person to die to empty the meter becomes Pit. And the same goes for the dark side. That person becomes Dark Pit. And when either Pit or Dark Pit is killed, the first one is killed, the game ends. And the team that killed Pit wins.
Uh-huh.
And that's how that works. And when the person becomes Pit, actually has a different weapon than what they started. You get a random weapon. It's usually a really good one. It's usually a pretty interesting weapon. But you have a completely different weapon, and the whole goal is, like, run away and hide because you don't want to die.
Yep.
Man, that's just a blast. And it's a little less chaotic because there's no friendly fire. So if someone throws out a smart bomb, you're not going to get affected by that area of effect. And obviously you have people to back you up, so that makes it a little more manageable. So I prefer the team battle, and I think that's just a blast. And you're always earning new powers because you could also customize your power loadout when you go into a match. It's like this grid-based thing, and you fit, like, I don't know, Tetris pieces into it.
Yes, exactly.
And so you can take different powers into the multiplayer, and, oh, it's a blast. I mean, over the past two nights, I've played a good 5 or 6 hours of it, and I love it. That's probably the most multiplayer I've played in recent memory of, like, anything.
I wish there was, like, an easier way to use your items, though. It's, like, really hard to scroll through the items with the D-pad, and then you have to, like, press... Match my item usage to up on the D-pad because down is like even further away from the thumbstick.
Yeah,
but I mean, there's no good way to do it. I mean, it's the best way, but it's still not that great.
I don't know why. Like, yeah, what happens is down on the touchscreen on the lower left, there's a scroll for your powers, and it only displays like what, like two of them at a time.
Yeah,
two or three of them or something. Like,
I think it's three, maybe.
Yeah, so you can scroll through them with a stylus and then tap one to use it. But obviously, if you're doing that, you're not aiming. Alternatively, you can use the D-pad to scroll through them and press down, or as Seth remapped it to up, to activate them. But at that point, then you've taken your thumb off the circle pad and you're not moving. So either way, you're not doing something vital. I think really what they should have done is just sort of laid them out across the bottom of the bottom screen rather than just...
Yeah, like just all of them out there at once.
Yeah. And then, yeah, I think that would have been much preferable. I think maybe they did try that in playtesting and it turned out people kept sliding the stylus over something and using it, but I don't know. So, something, what they have there is not, you're right, it's not ideal. It's very tough to use powers in the middle of combat.
Or maybe, I don't know, would that work? Like, maybe a double tap on the screen to use your power? Like, you scroll through with the D-pad still, but double tap where you want to shoot it? I don't know if that...
Yeah, I don't know either. Because, like, I have, like, a laser beam ability. have a power that shoots a laser beam. But to use it, I either have to stop moving or I have to stop aiming, which makes it very difficult to position the laser beam at a point where it hurts people.
Mm-hmm.
It has a wide blast. I mean, the beam is pretty wide, but, I mean, you still have to be a bit more precise than the game allows sometimes. So, yeah, that's definitely kind of a pain.
The game's, like, super customizable, though. You could change pretty much anything, like how you move, how you aim, and then the speeds for each and what button does what. So there's, like, tons of stuff that if you're not comfortable with the controls, there's a lot of things that you could mess around with to try to get it to your liking.
Yeah, yep.
Like, I upped the horizontal speed for the flicking, and that actually helped me a good deal more.
Well, yeah. I pretty much jack the speed on everything. It's all my speed all the way up.
Super speed on everything?
Super speed on everything. And even then, it's still kind of slow. Faster!
And then, of course, it's like Sakurai. So there's just tons of stuff everywhere. There's like statues to collect. I guess not necessarily statues, but...
Idols.
Character models. Yeah, they're idols.
Kind of like Smash Brothers, yeah.
Exactly.
And then, and of course, there's like those... goals or what are they called, treasures or whatever, like if you do a specific, like, it's basically an achievement system.
Yeah, I think there's like 250 of those or something. 150.
I heard there are actually more than one. There's actually more than one panel.
Oh really? So if you clear that first grid, then there's,
yeah, there's 250 goals on the first grid, and I heard that there are more, and you get rewards for you get in-game rewards for completing these achievements. You get weapons or hearts or whatever. Uh-huh. So I don't know, I think there was a perception, I think even though I kind of knew different, I kind of share this perception. I'm not sure why. So all is forgiven if you feel this way. But for some reason, I kind of felt like the game was going to be kind of thin. There wasn't going to be a lot there. But this game is huge. It's absolutely packed.
Yep. There's tons and tons of stuff in there.
Yeah. So, I mean,
even the single player, I think, is supposed to be something like 25 chapters long.
25 or 30. Yeah, that's my understanding, too. I'm not there yet, but I heard it's quite big. So, I mean, if you had the impression, like I did, that perhaps this is kind of a smallish game, no, this game is huge.
Yep.
That's about all I've been playing. If you want,
and actually, I like the stand too. I've been using the stand to play. And
yeah, that's
I'm
right.
Liking
yeah,
it.
The game comes with a stand. If you're not familiar with this, and because everyone was making fun of it, everyone's like, "Ugh, the stand! Like, don't use the stand! Like, what a weird
it's
thing!"
It's an optional. It's an optional stand. Don't make
fun. Ugh, this game comes with a precautions booklet. Well, I don't have seizures. Well, then don't. Who cares? The stand's not even, like, a new concept. Like, you can buy... I bought, like, a Hori stand. Like, you can buy these things separately. It's not a new thing.
I just want to point out, like, how unfortunate Hori's name is in the West.
Oh, yeah, right. But I haven't used a stand. Because, like I said, I played Metroid Prime Hunters so much that it doesn't bother me to not use the stand. But from the people... From what I understand, people who have used the stand have good things to say about it. So,
uh-huh.
It really boils down to whether you find it beneficial or not. You know, whether you prefer to hold it or set it down. And everyone who's used the stand seems to like it. So I don't think it was really that bad of an idea to include it in that case.
Yeah, I like it. I mean, you don't have to hold the system on your body or with your hand up. So that helps. And then it also helps so you could keep the 3D effect, like, centered. You're not, like, moving the system around a lot or anything. So I think it, like, helps twofold.
Yeah, that's true. When I first started playing online, I had the 3D effect on. And then... after a while, I had to shut it off because I was just jerking around too much.
Yep. So it helps with that. Keeps it in place and keep your view perfect.
Cool. And so you want to share your... You have any expanded thoughts on Kid Icarus?
No, I think we covered a lot. I haven't played that much. Like I said, I've only beat two chapters and I only played the couple hours of multiplayer. But I actually really am liking the multiplayer. I was not expecting to like that much.
Yeah, me neither. It's really... And some of those... The maps are really well designed.
Yep. It's a little more chaotic than I thought it was going to be, but it's really damn fun.
It is. I like the map with the grind rails. So you could be riding these rails and, like, shooting at people as you pass by. I love it.
Yep. There's no jump, though. There's no jumping when you're on land, so you sort of rely on these jump pads that are just positioned around everywhere.
Yeah, which... there's no jump. There's an ability to jump, though. There's a power you can equip.
I have that. It just goes straight up, though. I don't even know what the point of it is.
Yeah. Well, there is a glide one, too, I think.
I have not gotten glide
ability. I haven't tried it. I have it. But I'm like, yeah, no, when I'm shooting people, I really don't want to be fumbling with my powers to, like, jump. It's not... I don't know how useful that's going to be.
Yeah, so that's I'm enjoying it. I'm looking forward to playing some more of it. I've mostly been playing Ys, Oath, and Fel'Ghana, and I am loving this game. I was not expecting to like it even close to this much. I was going into it thinking it was like just your standard RPG with a more action-y battle system. I don't know. But I'm hesitant to even call it an RPG. It's, to me, it's like as much an RPG as Symphony of the Night is.
Yeah. You know, I don't know if I go straight with that comparison, but I mean, it does have like, I don't know, like closer to more like an action adventure feel too. I don't know how to really put it because like, if I remember correctly, there's no restorative items. Like you kind of pick those up while you're out. There's, uh-huh. there's some lessened RPG elements and some more, even arcade style, like the bosses especially are quite, arcade style, I think.
Yeah, they're like
pattern-based.
They're pattern-based, and then after maybe you do a certain amount of damage, their pattern will change and become harder. And but it's just really action-y. I mean, you just slash around at enemies with... It's really fast. Like, it's hard to explain how fast the combat is in this game, because I can't really think of any other games that are like it with combat this fast. It's like Secret of Mana on speed.
Yeah.
Sort of what it is. So you just... You pretty much just slash your way through the minor enemies, like, really fast, and their body parts go flying around. It's good stuff. But then you get to the bosses, and the bosses will kick your ass.
Yes, they are very challenging, and you'll die, and but I think that they're very satisfying. It's a very good kind of challenge.
Yeah, I mean, they're doable. Like, every time you die on one, you go, okay, I got to do this different, I got to do that different. And so, I mean, they're not necessarily unfair. They're just really, I think they're well designed and hard.
And the game gives you the option to start right there again.
Yeah, so you could just restart on bosses over and over. But otherwise, if you die in some areas, you're pretty much all the way back to a same point.
Yeah, that is true, which is more of like an action trope than an RPG trope.
Yep, so you could lose some good progress if you don't save that often. Luckily, you get an ability where you could like warp to any save point, like that you've been to in the entire game. So a lot of times when I'm like low on health, I'll just cheat and warp my way out of there. But the game, there's a lot of platforming too, which is something I wasn't expecting. There's like the game's like isometric for the most part, but then there's a lot of like basically 2D segments where you're just doing a lot of platforming.
Yeah.
Where there are enemies around too. And like you said, like the adventure game elements, you get different there's like three different powers you could get. You get like fireballs, and you could rush through things, and you get a spin attack. And the spin attack, you could use that to traverse like gaps, like large gaps that you can't jump over. So you could like go back to areas, and you could like find items that you haven't found before by using your different power ups that you get. And let's see, what else? I don't know. It just reminds me of like a an old school game, but just very action-packed, like a high-speed old-school game.
Yep, it's very good.
And there's not too much talking. There's, like, scenes with some talking, but I'm nowhere near as much as, like, a regular RPG, I think.
One of the voice actresses, I forget the character's name, but it's, you know, it's this girl. And I'm like, oh, man, I've heard this voice before. Who the hell is this? And because the girl, not only was the same voice actress, but she's using the same sort of tone and inflection as this other character that she voiced, and it was Colette from Tales of Symphonia.
I see. There's no voice acting in the PC version. I just want to point that out.
What? Really? They took that out?
I mean, it's a straight port from the original Japanese PC game, and there was no voice acting in that.
Oh, I see. Oh, okay. That's interesting. So
the voice acting was just for the PSP version.
Okay. Yeah. You have no idea what I'm talking about then.
I think I know what character you're talking about. It's probably Elena. Because
yeah, that sounds about right.
Like, she seems looks like very Colette-ish.
Yeah,
but the writing's damn hilarious in certain parts. Like, I don't know. There's like one part where you first meet Elena. She's like, I guess like her and one of the characters, Dogi, they were like childhood friends, and she's like, "I'm 17 now, you know," and he's like, "You sure are." I'm like, okay. But it's really fun. It's a really fun action-adventure game with RPG elements. That's how I'm going to peg it.
And you have a chance to win one of two copies.
You have a chance to win one. I mean, this game's so fun. I was like, I just need to share this with people. Because I wasn't expecting to like be this fun, but it definitely is.
You're such a cupcake.
I know. What else? I've Oh, God. I was playing the Kid Icarus NES
3. I played that for about 10 minutes. I'm like, fuck this noise.
I do not get why people like this game. Like, even a little bit. I haven't put that much time into it prior. I'm like 3 levels in on this version on the 3DS. And I just don't get it.
No.
It is not.
And one thing I forgot about the original, and I don't think it applies to Myths and Monsters, is that it's a vertically scrolling game. It's like a platformer that goes up rather than across. And if you fall past where the screen has moved up, you die.
You die. That is not in Myths and Monsters.
No. You can go back down. You can backtrack.
Yep. And that already, like, that makes of Myths and Monsters already, like, way better.
Yep.
That's your original.
I forgot about that because I felt, I'm like, oh, let me go back and grab that. Nope, dead. Oh, son of a bitch. I forgot about that.
And I don't, are there, like, side-scrolling levels in this game, or is everything vertical scrolling? Like I said, I'm not that far into it.
I don't remember. I could have sworn, like, because Myths and Monsters had dungeon segments.
Didn't it? It has dungeons and side-scrolling segments.
Right. So, I mean, I think my memories of either game is kind of mushed together into one giant ball of memory, I guess. I don't know.
I mean, yeah, I don't think of Myths and Monsters as, like, anything special, but holy shit, it's, like, way better than the NES game.
Yes, yeah. They definitely improved upon it.
Yep. I played through Aliens vs. Predator on MAME, the arcade game.
Nice.
And it's a side-scrolling beat-em-up. I'd never even played this game before, but it's really damn good. This has to be one of the best side-scrolling beat-em-ups I've played. And it's because instead of just, like, well, your basic side-scrolling beat-em-ups, you have, like, punch, kick, and then you can, like, run and then maybe punch and jump and kick and stuff like that. You have your jumps and attacks and just combinations of that. But this game actually has, like, inputs that you could do for the characters.
Like a fighting game?
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, it's basically like a fighting game. Like, you could do, like, forward, and then that'll do an attack. But then you could, like, combo the moves together, too. So you could do, like, you could do a basic string attack, then you could do, like, forward to do a stab attack, and then you could, like, push down-up attack, and you'll do, like, a little shoryuken at the end. So it's, like, a really good fighting system inside this game.
Who developed this?
It's Capcom, I'm pretty sure.
Really?
Yep.
How old is it?
I have no idea.
I'm not even sure if I've ever heard of this. I can't imagine, like, punching a xenomorph in the face. Like,
yeah, it's funny, too, because it's, like, two humans teamed up with two aliens. Or not aliens, but, no, two humans teamed up with two predators. So it's predators and two humans on one team, and then, like, you guys are just killing aliens. And it's really weird. And, like, each character has, like, different moves, too. Like, the moves I'm telling you is just for the female human character. Like, there's completely different inputs for each different character and the different stuff they could do.
And did this actually come out in the West?
Yeah, I mean, the ROM I was playing on said U.S. version. It was in English and everything.
Interesting.
So.
And how old would you peg it as?
I'm going to say probably 95, 96.
Never even heard of this. I kind of want to play this now. Someone should totally release this on, like, Xbox Live Arcade or something.
They should. Seriously, it's one of the best side-scrolling beat-em-ups I've played. And, I mean, there's, like, a whole plot, too. Like, you're, like, the Queen Alien is probably, like, the third or fourth boss. And then there's, like, a whole, like, tons of levels after that where, like, there's actually the human army is, like, is using the aliens for nefarious purposes. And you got to stop them. So you're, like, fighting humans as well as aliens. And even some predators in there. You got to fight some evil predators. So it's really fun.
Yeah, sounds like it. That sounds good.
You should look up YouTube videos. Like, I've seen YouTube videos of people doing just insane combos on these xenomorphs.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
I'm trying to think if I played anything else, but no, I'm pretty sure that's it.
Awesome. I guess that wraps up this episode. Unless you have anything like that.
Not at all. Thanks for, I'd just like to thank everybody for still reading and listening to the site, even though there's only two of us.
Yeah, I definitely appreciate that as well. And even though this episode, these podcasts are getting to be like 2.5 hours. Like,
how is this so long? I don't even know.
I have no, you know, when we first started this podcast, we struggled to fill an hour. And even then, it was like half silence. And now we have like these packed, like dense, like 2.5 hour episodes. And more often than that, people seem to like them. So I'm glad people like these really long episodes because that's what we're doing.
Yep. thank you very much for listening to these.
Yep, I appreciate it. So again, you can win one of two copies of Ease on Steam, and the podcast is now on Stitcher, which is worth checking out in its own right, whether we're on it or not. I think that just makes it a little bit better. But I want to thank everyone for listening, and until next time, you guys take it easy.
Bye.